It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis has the week off, but hey, the great Danny Sullivan from Search Engine Land joins us as we talk about South by Southwest. Stacey Tigenbotham's the expert. She lives there. She's even presenting. We'll find out what was new there. The latest from Google's Cloud Next, last week's big Google conference. And Stacey's going to help me rewire my house. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 396, recorded Wednesday, March 15th, 2017. Mechanical Turking. This Week in Google is brought to you by Eero. Why settle for just a Wi-Fi router when you can have a brilliant, hyper-fast, super-simple Wi-Fi system? No more buffering, no more dead zones. Finally, Wi-Fi that works. To get Eero, visit Eero.com, Best Buy, or Amazon today. And by Curry, the real live robot with a great personality. Curry is available for pre-order now at HeyCurry.com. That's HeyCurry.com. And by Segment, the leading unified customer data platform. Segment collects data across all your websites, mobile apps, and cloud platforms and delivers it to over 170 third-party tools and apps. Get 3 months free on the Segment team plan when you sign up at segment.com/twit. It's time for Twig! This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news of the cloud, including Google, but everything else. Stacey Higginbotham joining us, as always, from Austin, Texas, home of South by Southwest, taking a break from the party round to be with us today. She's at IoTpodcast.com. Hi, Stacey. Are you being silent?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I was like, Andy's
It is an audio program. If you nod, no one will hear you scream.
Welcome. I wasn't even nodding. I was just kind of like, thank you. I'm going to be great today, let me tell you.
Well, I'm going to ask you about South By in just a second. Also joining us, so we were going to have Jeff from London, but it turns out, as one would expect, that his Pixel C on London Wi-Fi is not a good mix. So we're going to instead have somebody great, Danny Sullivan for Search Engine Land. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Good
Hi,
to
Danny.
Be here. I shall try to channel Jeff's curmudgeonliness.
Get cranky. Is that the Golden Gate Bridge behind you there?
Oh, yeah. That's cool. It's an old, Disney sold them once. It's like a monorail. I got to put the monorail back up.
Oh, a monorail.
It goes through it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. You have a monorail awesome. In your house. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I can't even see it. It's a cropped out on my, what I see.
Well, we see it just in case, if a child comes strolling in.
Oh, yeah, my wife's all set to make that
happen.
She's
ready to lunge.
She's like, you're going to be doing a thing today? I'm going to send the boys in.
Oh, that was the best. It was so funny. We're talking about the BBC reporter, which, of course, is old news now. But it's so funny because on Twit, it would be no big deal on any of our shows. If kids come in, we go, oh, who's that? But on the BBC, of course, it's very serious. He also, we found out, was not wearing dress pants. He's wearing blue jeans.
Yeah, let's not talk about the sweats on there.
So he didn't want to stand
I don't want to let down my t-shirt. Did you see the Wall Street Journal? They did a follow-up interview with them.
Yeah.
It was great. And they tweeted today that their interview that they did with them afterwards has been the most viewed thing the Wall Street Journal has ever had.
Isn't that hysterical? He's now, by the way, called BBC Dad. Wow, it's most successful piece ever. Yeah, because everybody wants to know, what's the deal? There's his wife in the background grabbing the son who is on a roly-poly thing. And then
the interview was great. Yeah. He's talking about how he was like, he heard his daughter come in. He's trying to hold it together. He says, and then when he heard the baby roll, he like, then I knew it was over.
It was over. Any pretense of seriousness or dignity out the window. The best take on it was Ben Thompson, and we read it on Twit on Sunday, but Ben Thompson of Stratechery, who was in a similar situation, deeply understood what was going on, and he glossed the whole thing beautifully. So South By is in Austin, and I heard a piece on 60DB today. 60DB's founder was in Austin and was lined up to go to TechCrunch's event, the line was so long he couldn't get in. He didn't, you know, the whole event is to, to show, entrepreneurs to other, anyway, couldn't get in. So he goes down the line to see who's in this line. They were all Austinites just looking for free food. Apparently, there's a spreadsheet circulating in Austin that says which parties have free food. And and so he said there wasn't a single entrepreneur in the line for the TechCrunch party. Are you one of those Austinites? Wow.
No. I don't wait in line for anything. And not because I'm snobby. It's just because I'm like, not worth it.
Ain't no time for that.
So this will be my 16th South By.
Wow.
And this year I took it pretty easy. So I can't tell you too many exciting things. I can tell you about like Google's Project Jacquard jacket, which looks pretty cool.
And is delayed even more.
And is it's very hard to put, haptic feedback and silver fabric and to weave silver fabric into a $350 jacket.
Did they have?
Give them a break.
Did they have one? Oh, look, here's
they had a prototype.
Here's the spreadsheet. Free at SXSW.
So it used to be that South By, this was a huge deal because, I remember when I started going, in the early aughts, nobody had food. There was beer and wine and hard alcohol everywhere, but you could never get food.
Interesting.
But now it's really easy to get food. Yeah, I see all these people complaining about not having an Uber and Lyft, and I'm like, back in the day.
Oh, you had to walk.
Breakfast tacos.
Well, and, of course, first of all, Austin's a great town. And South By is more than South by Southwest Interactive. It's a film festival, and it's a music festival, and it's an interactive festival over 3 weeks. It made its name in the interactive. I mean, it used to be very small, right? Just a few thousand people. It made its name in the interactive space after Twitter made their debut there in 2006, or maybe it was 2007. And then Foursquare the next year, and maybe Gowalla, which is an Austin version of Foursquare. Who else? Meerkat, I guess, a few years ago was all the rage.
Meerkat Highlight was one of the ones that everyone was for a while. Everyone was like, "I'm the breakout app."
Yeah.
Really, I love South By. It is mostly marketers talking to other marketers, and I guess for Austinites looking for free food.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad. And South By, the people who put it on have really started to put the hammer down on having registered events close to the convention center as part of this way to crack down and get people here. The other thing is Spotify wasn't here this year. I didn't see a Facebook presence. They used to have a house or a bar they would rent out. Samsung didn't have a big presence there. They sent people. So it feels very much like it's kind of drifting away in relevance for the
When I saw that CNN had taken over an entire restaurant and venue, and they did, by the way, they were there. Jake Tapper did some good interviews a bit with it. Mm-hmm. I thought, this has become mainstream. This is no longer a geek conference. And I guess there's some very good seminars. In fact, I know a lot of people, in our circle who had great seminars there. But it doesn't seem to be.
There's some really
what is South By these days? Is it a party?
So it's like a big party and some really intellectually cool content. Honestly, this sounds incredibly nerdy, but I have more fun going to the seminars and the panels.
Yeah.
And not the big ones like Joe Biden and all of that. It's more like the guy who kind of discovered the CRISPR gene editing
process, that would be great.
Was here talking about. See, so there's that kind of stuff. In previous years, I had gone to see Slack physicists talking about Beyond Moore's Law, how to use the spin of electrons to make a transistor.
That's neat.
Is again super nerdy, but there's also very cool social stuff, and there's cool stuff about medicine and food. But you kind of have to find it on your own, and it's totally easy to get lost in just going to party to party to party to party.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
It became a social event and less of a tech event. Although I envy you because you're in Austin, so it's easy for you to go. And it's hard to fly down there, impossible to get a hotel unless you arrange for it a year ahead of time. So by being there,
Leo,
you
could have stayed at Casa de Stacy.
The Higginbotham?
Yes.
No, I wouldn't.
I would have printed out the list of commands so you could work the smart home.
Echo, turn on my light. Make me breakfast. So you saw
Leo.
You saw the connected smart jacket, or did they have one there?
They had a prototype there.
Yeah, because they've said they're going to be delayed prototype. A little bit, right?
Yes, they were supposed to be spring of this year, and now they're going to be fall.
This is the Jacquard technology that we were talking about at Google I/O last year.
Was it last year
or 2 years ago? It's been a while.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a long time. Yeah. It's cool ATAP project.
So this is Levi's is going to
projects.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. They didn't sell ATAP or anything. So this is a denim jacket that's connected. How? I mean, all I see right now is he's tapping a button on the sleeve to play his music. Big deal.
It connects to your phone. There's also, the jacket, what's cool about Jacquard is actually that it's a way to make fabric that is conductive. So silver infused fabric.
Okay, so that's confusing in this video because he has a big plastic button on his cuff, but that's not required.
So I'm not sure about that. What it has is you add to that fabric, it's got somewhere on there a pouch where you put electronics.
Right.
And that's what, quote unquote, powers it. And I don't know if it's the pack is your smartphone or there's an additional.
Do you have to have a battery for your jacket?
Oh, I read something that you have a little cufflink thing that's part of it. So there's a little cufflink part that's that little silver thing. That's the power.
It's a rivet.
You take that off before you wash it. And I would always remember to take that off before I threw it in
course,
the wash.
Yeah.
I would never wash it like this Fitbit, which by the way, these hold up really well in the wash. I can attest to that, which is
the
great.
Original ones did not because I washed three or four.
Yes.
So there's a plastic thing that you have to remove before you wash it. So that's a little, there is a little battery in this. I don't know. And it's going to cost, by the way, $350.
Okay, I paid $350 for a wool coat that does nothing but keep me warm.
Okay, so you're going to run out and buy this when it comes out this fall?
So I can't tell my left from my right, and I'm kind of excited by the idea of haptic feedback.
Yeah.
So
it's not merely connective. No. It actually buzzes and vibrates at you. With the whole jacket or just part of it?
I think it's just the cuff.
Oh.
I'm reading something that says it's just that cuff.
Yeah.
Big deal. Why don't you just sell me a cuff I can put on my jacket? I'm more fascinated by not knowing the left and right because I'm that way too. And my son's that way as well. And it was great. No, when I was teaching him to drive, I would say go left, and I meant to go right, but he interpreted me telling him to go left as going right because he was getting mixed up, and it was great. But I'm ready for a support society. And
do you think this is a side effect
if the cuffs can help,
of being geeky? That because in the real world, most people know their left from their right.
I don't know.
Over time, or did you have it and lose it?
No,
or did you
if it weren't for the Pledge of Allegiance, I'd. If you lost
that's the thing.
The
if you wear a ring, that's your ring hand or something. I mean,
it's on my left.
I'm left. I think it's a brain thing. I really do. Yeah. I always say make a Stacy if I'm driving. So then that means make a left whoever my passenger is.
Make a Stacy.
So that's
I'm sitting here. So make go my way or go your way.
And then when I would
make
drive
a driver,
Britain,
make
more,
a passenger.
Wow.
In Britain, it would get confusing because I would drive there and I would always just think of left turns as dangerous turns and right turns as safe turns. So then my wife would tell me to turn right.
God.
And I would think, turn right, that's the safe turn. But then I'd start to go left. But she'd know I said go right.
Ah! Did she scream and howl and go, we're going to die?
Manage to survive.
All right. So there's the jacket of perhaps dubious value. What else did you see? Anything else at South By that you That we poor slobs.
It's not
didn't
over
see.
Yet. Let's see.
No, it's only halfway through.
No, I didn't.
How did you survive without the Ubers tomorrow. And Lyfts? Without Uber and Lyft, they say, I don't even know how you survive. How are you getting around?
It's so hard.
Well, that's so the very first day, Sunday, the two local ride sharing services had problems, right?
Well, the first day was actually Friday.
Oh, okay.
We had really terrible weather. On Saturday, it was raining and cold the whole day. So all of the ride shares were overwhelmed. And we have four of them. I got down and it was 2x surge pricing. So nothing terrible. So Saturday night was really hard for people. I have a friend who actually took a ride in some stranger's car. I was just like, don't do that. She just walked in. It's like, this guy was like, oh, I'm an independent ride sharing service. Do you want to ride?
Chris Messina was saying, I wanted to hail an Uber. I couldn't. So I just called a cab and then two other people got in the back. And I said, by the way, Chris used to be on the Uber board. We've created Uber sharing. And then it drove off. So that's, you know what? That's awesome. That's great. So Ride Austin is the big one, right? Is that the big local ride sharing?
Ride Austin is the big one. Then there's Fasten, which is, I think, gives more money to the drivers. And then there's Fair.
So apparently, Fasten got really slow on Saturday night. The busiest hour, the busiest night.
Slow.
So because of that, people moved over to Ride Austin, which then crashed for several hours, 5 hours total.
Yeah, Ride Austin's app was terrible.
Yeah. And so all this did is tell all the geeks from Silicon Valley, aren't you lucky you have Uber? Ryan Hoover of Product Hunt tweeted, spent an hour trying to find a ride. Austin is broken without Uber or Lyft. Other ride sharing apps aren't working and all the taxis are full. He was mad as a wet hen.
So Slate actually had a great article talking about this. And the key point that I thought was so awesome about it was the people coming in, it shows how for well-off people, transportation isn't broken. They never think about public transport.
Right.
And that has huge implications for cities.
That's right.
And maybe this is a little fairy tale, but I actually thought that was a really good point that people complaining about.
Yeah. It's the same thing with healthcare, by the way. Politicians don't ever have to take subways. Or worry about health insurance. So it really changes their perspective on the whole thing. And it's what's really sad, you look at a city like L.A., where for whatever reasons, you could talk about all the conspiracy theories, they never really got a very robust mass transit system. It became a car culture, and it makes it it's not a very good city because it's spread out so much because of all the cars. And so you really could damage a city. And then you look at New York, which is forced to coexist on a small island, and the subways were built before politicians came around or whatever.
Although it's even harder with L.A. because it's not. It's like L.A. is one of something like 70 cities in the greater Southern California
and
area.
And it's hard to get any. It's an hour to get anywhere because you have to drive on congested freeways that are congested 24/7.
But people, I know the people, we don't have it here in Orange County, but the growth of the metro in LA has become so strong that now people are complaining they can't get on. There's not enough cars. So it's so popular. Right. So ironically, it's been successful to the degree that now they're losing people because they can't accommodate them all.
I don't know if that's successful. But they are trying to do light rail, right? And I think the buses are getting better. I mean, I think there's some movement to get some mass transit in LA, but.
Oh, that's huge. No, I mean, there's been huge. LA's got a huge mass transit system now. That's what the Metro Light Rail system's all about. You know, and the whole thing where you can go down to the ocean, you can ride all over the place. They keep adding and adding and adding more to it. But that's been the problem. It's actually become successful to the degree that they can't accommodate the people that keep coming onto the network as it's grown.
Now they figure out
how do they handle adding on even more cars.
Good.
But the high speed.
Well, when
high
you said cars, rate, you didn't mean automobiles. You meant train cars.
Train cars. Yeah, that's what I meant. They're so full that they have to leave without people. Being.
That's good. All right. Any? You're doing a panel on what, Stacey?
Ooh. Intelligent living in the smart home. It's got Amazon, Sonos, and SmartThings.
Oh, fun.
And you know what I'm going to ask them about?
What?
The Amazon Sonos integration and when that's going to happen.
Yes, please.
Also spying.
And
yes.
Spying. Please. I hope you will.
I'm like, I'm more excited about one as opposed to the other. But yeah, they're not going to talk too much about spying, but no. It's worth a shot.
I bet. So that's really the question. Will they talk more about spying or the Sonos integration?
I'll give them that choice. I'll be like, here's your topics. Pick one.
I think they haven't talked much about either ever since last year. Well, that'll be fun. Good. So you're doing a panel. And do you have any, is there any way we could see that? Or do they stream those now? Or
They stream some of them. I guess I should figure that out.
Because I'd love to watch it.
Just meerkat it.
That's what I'll do.
Well, now I'm looking. I went to southbysouthwest.com/live, and they are doing live streaming of, you know, limited conferences, actually conversations. Doesn't look like seminars. You know, they want you to pay the seminar fee, so I'd be very surprised if they'd stream any of those panels. So there are
they
some
sometimes
things.
Sometimes do ones that they feel are going to be popular. Let's
right.
see.
Let's see. You're on what? Wednesday Trapped or Thursday? You're on Thursday. So
they did a preview Thursday. Of Alien Covenant?
Now, I you have very that. Quick eyes. And Buzz Aldrin was there. The Wu-Tang Clan.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck Todd. Wu-Tang. Dang. Ray Kurzweil. Steve Case. All right, let's go to Thursday. I don't see Stacy on here.
Steve Case is there everywhere.
I know. Steve
is here.
Yeah. Founder and chief strategy officer for dot blockchain music and pledge music. Art installation. Ooh. Noia. Yeah, they're not streaming much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next week they'll stream.
Sorry.
Some. Yeah. Do they?
I'll tell you all about it.
Do they ever? You could do, if you go to their YouTube channels, they put past videos up, so you might, maybe we'll catch Stacy later. That would be really nice.
Or you can come on down.
Come on down. If you're in the Austin area, or even if you're not, come on down. I like staying at the Driscoll.
Oh, yeah.
That's nice, my favorite hotel.
Yeah.
And I know the secret entrance to get past the line.
Oh, very good.
You go downstairs, you walk across, you go up all the ways around, you come down the back staircase, and then you're in the bar.
That must be annoying to native Austinites like you, Stacy, that all of this tech people say, oh, I know my way around Austin. Hey, if it weren't for South,
doesn't Fly, bother me at all.
It's good for Austin, right?
You know, exactly. I'm like, do I find South by a little bit annoying? Yes. Am I mad at it? No, because it brings like $150 million.
Yeah. Are you close enough to town that it, you know, ties up your traffic and stuff like that?
It's pretty localized to downtown, and yeah. I'm about 12 to 15 minutes away.
Oh, yeah. So you're fine. Yeah. Yeah.
I just, I sometimes am sad because I'm like, oh, I want it. I'm downtown and I can eat at this place. And then it's already taken over by South by.
3 weeks a year. 3 weeks a year. Austin is a really fun city. You've got Alamo Draft House. Some of my greatest memories are in Austin. Crowd surfing at Stubbs. Things like that.
Okay.
I remember you one year walking around with what looked like a Ghostbusters backpack.
That's exactly it. And I
had, you had
a camera on a staff.
Yeah, like eight different things.
I was like the Doonesbury character with the transmitter on my back. Yeah. That was fun.
Nice.
Well, I've only been to South by two or three times, and I was told before I went the first time by Robert Scoble. He said, well, it's really the main point of South by, and this consider the source, is the parties. And so I was prepared to go and cover the parties, and that was the remote unit.
Well, no, that's true. I mean, consider your source here. I'm a giant, huge nerd who's actually, like, into tech, so... I'm like, ooh, I want to go to Crazy Talks by Physicists.
Right. Whereas, no, but I'm with you. That sounds really cool. That I would do. I only went to one panel. It was Mark Cuban's panel a few years ago. He started talking, and he came off the biggest jerk ever. And then the fire alarm went off, cleared the room, and Lisa and I looked at each other and we said, yeah, let's not go back. So that's it. That's my only South by Southwest seminar experience. Let's take a break. Come back with more. We're going to talk about Google. More Google. We got all sorts of good Google stuff, including Google's new futuristic headquarters. They get the go-ahead. ReCAPTCHA just got invisible. Invisible ReCAPTCHA. And are you ready? Are you going to buy the new Google digital whiteboard? What do they call it? The Snap Jam Sneaky Back? What are you? Jamboard.
What?
Schlingelback ding dong. $5,000 TV from Google. Before we do that, though, we were talking before the show about mesh. We were and Stacy was schooling me on how mesh works. And we were talking about the king of the mesh. This is the company that brought mesh to the consumer space and is transforming Wi-Fi. So many people nowadays are using, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 year old Wi-Fi routers that aren't getting the job done. Don't get a Wi-Fi router. Get a super simple, hyper fast, brilliantly designed Wi-Fi system. Get the Eero. It's easy to set up. You can set up in just a few minutes. You download the Eero app and they walk you through every step of the process. The units are attractive. You don't mind having that in your living room. There's a piece of tape on there. You'll take that off. In fact, you can even control the little blue lights on this. And you can even say, hey, Echo, dim the light on my Eero. But my favorite Echo command for the Eero, when you set up the Eero, you see all the devices that are attached to your network. You can assign ownership to each of the devices. So I went through our 14-year-old's laptop and Chromebook and iPad and phone and game machine and Xbox and PlayStation, and I named them all Michael's stuff. And now I can say, hey, Echo, pause Michael's internet. And we, Lisa and I, continue to surf with impunity, but Michael goes, hey! And we go to bed! By the way, he cannot turn it back on again with the Echo. You have to use the app, which is even better. It is amazing. The Eero app lets you manage your network from the palm of your hand. I set up my mom with Eero's because she was having trouble because she has a studio that's out in the backyard. And it was hard for her. She said, I can't go to the studio because I can't use my Echo out there. I can't use my iPad out there. So when I was out a couple of months ago, I set her up, put the Eero's out there. And now I can launch the Eero app and see how her network is doing. I can manage it from here. The other thing I think is really important to mention is the Eero is overbuilt. It comes with more processor, more memory than it really needs. And that is so it can be upgraded over time. Features, performance can be improved with new software. When they rolled out Mesh 2.0, they got a whole, it's like getting a whole new router. Of course, WPA2 encryption, guest networks, all the features you want, even some advanced features. I have a server on my Eero network, and I was able to set up port reservations, so it always had the same port and port forwarding. Really nicely done. The Eero 30-day money-back guarantee, and because it's their first birthday, they're celebrating with permanently lowered prices. If you've been waiting, you're in luck. Three-pack of Eeros, $399. $299 for the two-pack. So it's $100 off the three-pack, $50 off the two-pack. It is a great deal. You can also buy individual Eeros and expand your network as needed. Eero.com or Amazon or Best Buy. Eero. No more buffering. No more dead zones. Finally, Wi-Fi that works. Thank you, Eero. Eero is a hero to people all over the country. They're just, I hear from people all the time. I never was able to get my Wi-Fi working. And thank you, Eero. There was an 8K VR ride at South By. Did you do that, Stacey? I wanted to do that.
No, I did not. I did not see the 8K VR ride.
Well, it's not too late. It's not too late. Here's true. Devendra Hardawar did a piece on it for Engadget. There's Devendra. And I guess it's a bare bones thing because you're not wearing a headset. They've got a circular 8K screen, and you're sitting on...
Oh, is this in the trade show?
Yeah, it looks like it's on the show floor. You're sitting on a servo-controlled hydraulic seat, which looks like it's made from, I hate to say it, but, and maybe this is a prototype, But don't those look like the plastic lawn chairs? You know, you might. I mean, I feel like.
Those are.
They might want to work on those a little bit. I hope there's a seatbelt. I think there is.
This is like those rides at Disney.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Or amusement parks where they stick you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what it looks like.
Universal has a number of great VR rides. Danny, you must have been to Universal. I love Harry Potter. Oh, yeah. That's Disney, though.
We hit Universal last year.
No, Harry Potter is with Universal.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, it's huge.
Yeah.
You get to fly. You know what? I have to say, and that's the one where you put visors on. Right? Oh, except that no, they're 3D glasses because it's still screens. It's still projection screens. But you're in a, you told me about it, Stacey, and then we did it. You're in a chair that does move.
Yeah.
Does move as a lot of these 3D rides.
Yeah, it's got this crazy pattern.
But it also tilts you and you really feel like you're flying. I loved that. That was one of my favorite virtual reality rides ever. They also have a good Transformers ride that's a little bit older, but you're right. Mm-hmm. The Harry Potter, that's great. Maybe it's because I had 3 or 4 butter beers before I got on it. Those things are disgusting.
The non-alcoholic.
It's really disgusting. Yeah. Do not do the butter beer.
They were so gross. My husband loved them.
They're very sweet. He must have a sweet tooth.
Yes. Oof.
So last week we were talking a little bit about Google Cloud Next. 10,000 attendees. Google says 100 announcements, 3 days of keynotes. Holy cow. This is the first time they've done a Google Cloud show. And they've done cutdowns. They have the day one keynote in 4 minutes, the day two keynote in 5 minutes if you want to just whiz through it. But here's some of the announcements. And we mentioned this last week. They acquired Kaggle, which is a big data company. AppBridge.
Competition company.
Sorry, again, it's competition?
They run big data competitions.
Oh, that's right, competitions, right. A community of data scientists and machine learning enthusiasts. AppBridge, which is some sort of enterprise, migrate data from on-prem file servers into G Suite and Google Drive thing. Identity-aware proxy for Google Cloud Platform. Data loss prevention. Key management. I go on and on and on and on and on. This is amazing. They announced a lot of stuff. I wonder if this is now going to be as big as Google I.O.
It would make sense. Maybe. They've really got to amp their...
Cloud's everything.
Yeah, I mean, and the focus on the enterprise is going to be so important for them.
It was interesting for me because I hadn't been to the cloud thing before, and I haven't really followed Google's cloud efforts that closely. And it was really... It felt like this coming out party. The keynotes were fairly, and then I think the real highlight was at the end of the first one when Eric Schmidt came out, and he actually set this vision of, you know, look, we have spent, I think he said it was either $35 billion or $3 billion or $5 billion, but it's like we've spent billions building this cloud platform, and you could go build the cloud platform if you want and spend the same billions, or you can build on top of it. Oh. And, you know, for me, it was really this crystallization of Google saying, look, we have a cloud OS and you can use our cloud OS and do awesome things. And if you're trying to figure out whether or not you should be using the Amazon cloud OS or the Microsoft cloud OS, ours comes with awesome machine learning stuff. So what do you got to think about? And, you know, but what I was kind of struggling getting a handle on the audience, because most of the stuff was pitched like we're trying to convince enterprises they should build on it, yet the audience seemed to be made up of your typical Google developers who are building stuff rather than the end clients, who I'm sure were there. But, you know, when I would talk to people, they were mainly developers who are like, yeah, I'm building stuff on the Google Cloud and, you know, I've got clients who want this sort of stuff or whatever. But it was really interesting. And, you know, I think at one point, too, they said that Drive was coming up at 800 million users or something. So it would be their next 1 billion user, 800 million users would be next to 1 billion user product. And
is that,
you know,
paid,
you can think, like,
is that paid users?
I don't think they
that
said paid users.
That must include paid and free, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, doesn't everybody who signs up for Gmail get a cloud Drive account?
Yeah, you get Drive.
So I don't know.
Yeah, but I know that everybody has to use it.
Right.
Use it. And they have said the Gmail itself is a billion user type of thing. So I guess the drive is catching up.
Right.
And I thought one of the interesting things, I haven't played with it more, was the whole drive streaming thing. Because I run into that problem where I've got, you know, 500 gigabytes of data on my main laptop that's synced to the cloud. And then I go traveling on like my MacBook that it can only fold 250 gigabytes. And it's like, so I can't sync everything from the cloud. And now it's, I guess one of the features is you can see all your files. And then if you want one, you stream the files on demand. So there's no more feeling like you had to have them all downloaded, which was kind of nice.
It's interesting what you say about the kind of disconnect between the people who were there and the people they thought would be there. Cause it sounds like this is more like a sales dream, Force kind of Salesforce style enterprise-y pitch, and instead they got the Google I/O crowd there.
I mean, it's hard for me to tell because I mean there were thousands of people there, and I talked to a handful of people, and it might have been I was only catching developers, but the pitch really was, especially on that first day, like, you know, you had this guy from HSBC come out and like, yeah, we're HSBC. It was like the low point of the whole keynote.
Right.
But
I hate it when they do those things.
But still, but saying we're doing it. Or you had...
Well, yeah, they said Colgate, Disney, eBay, HSBC, Lush, Odin, Planet, Schlumberger, yeah. The Home Depot, Verizon.
Saying like, and like Verizon came out and they're like going, we've moved to... And then I'm also trying to process and catch up with the terminology because Verizon's like, we moved to G Suite or whatever.
G Suite, yeah.
Right? And you realize, oh
you mean
you're saying that you guys are using Gmail now for all your employees, right?
Right. And I was excited about the Verizon thing, and then
they're not using Office Suite.
They're not using the cloud.
Using Gmail rather than Microsoft Office. I get it. And then, but it was interesting because they talked about how like they're trying to get early adopters and people going and convince them they want to shift over. And I was thinking, are you really having that much trouble getting people in your organization who already use Gmail for their personal work to say, I want to use it at work? It's like we had to, you know, and then certain people would convince people that the G Suite mail was great. And it's like, yeah, I think they knew it was great. They're still working off of, I don't know.
There's a real head-to-head, though, between Microsoft, Amazon, and Google. Those are the big three, right? And I guess maybe...
Yeah, that...
Well,
go ahead, Stacey.
Google has had no luck or less luck getting enterprises even to look at their cloud offering.
Right.
Like Microsoft's kind of won. And so with Diane Greene coming in, this to me feels like them creating something that, yes, can meet the developer needs, but is trying to prove that they have the support, the services, what you need as a company.
Green founded VMware. She did the keynote, right? Mm-hmm. She was keynote number one, was Diane Green. So it's an interesting to bring in the founder and CEO of VMware to Google and then put her up on stage. Yeah, that's the message is very clear. We understand.
Company for a lot of money.
Right.
They bought Diane Green's enterprise cloud company for a ton of money just to get Diane Green.
Right.
Although I don't think I made her happy at the press conference afterwards.
What'd you ask?
They had the press conference afterward, and they're like, well, you know, Google Cloud, it's awesome. Everybody should do it. And Hike said, so, you know, Google kind of has this history of a company that disrupts and puts other companies out of business. So now you're telling these companies that they should build stuff on your platform, but how do you reassure them that, you know, this is a great thing to do because you're not going to put them out of business. You're like, we don't put people out. Google doesn't do that. And I'm like, I think you do, but okay. So, you know, their message takeaway was, no, you can totally trust us. We're Google and it'll be fine. But that was really kind of the challenge to me. I mean, it was interesting, like, for example, that Snap has built so much of their business on Google's platform when Google would love to be Snap. Right. And would love to have that audience.
That's a really interesting point, because Microsoft, probably people feel much safer trusting Microsoft with their cloud stuff, because Microsoft's probably not going to be a competitor.
And perhaps even more so, I would say, with Amazon, although not that Amazon doesn't have tentacles that go out. But, you know,
well, Amazon pushes a lot of features to their cloud that kill their partners. I mean, every year at AWS Invent, everyone goes and they're like, are we going to be one of the feature? Are we going to be the company that becomes a feature of AWS and gets knocked out?
That's kind of the nature of ecosystems. You're, you're hoping you could be a little fish and survive with the big fish around. It's like being a remora eel.
I think more interesting.
Go ahead.
I think more interesting for Stacy. Go on, Danny.
No, I'm going to be the arbiter. Stacy.
There's a delay on the I
could tell you got a delay and that's hurting a little bit because yeah, you're a second behind us. No, it's not your fault. We'll fix it.
Oh, but now I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, I remember. The issue with Google is, I think, one of longevity for features and platform things that you like, because Google is not shy about saying, this sucks.
They'll cut anything. Yep. Well, just look at their message, the mess of messaging that they're making. And, of course, they announced Meet at Next, which is, what is Meet?
It's their Slack.
Oh, I'm so sad about that.
Why? What is it? So it's Hangouts Plus? I don't understand.
Does Hangouts go away? Messaging app because you need it, but this one is for Teams.
And Slack has text, but Meet is really about video. So it's the Hangouts video bit.
Well, and I think you get text as well.
Oh, okay. And do you get remote access too? Is it like a GoToMeeting kind of thing where you have video meetings and you share screens and that kind of thing, or?
I guess. I haven't explored it.
They've got dial-in phone numbers, integrated with G Suite, connected to meeting rooms. And you're right, Stacy, that there's always this fear that, well, this is, you know, if you were an enterprise who had relied on Hangouts, you might be very nervous. What's going on with Hangouts, you know? And then for a while, Hangouts was on the outs, and now it seems like they're adding features to Hangouts, and I don't know.
It's clear that Google is... Go ahead, Danny.
We need, like, in The Expanse, where when they're talking to the moon, it always says in the corner, 1 second delay, or talking to Mars.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Pretend you're talking delay. To Mars.
But I was going to say, for me, for someone who doesn't watch the cloud stuff that closely... My big takeaway was really like, wow, it's not the cloud has always felt so nebulous. And to the degree that I've thought of it, it's like you store your pictures up there, right? Or other things.
Right.
I know, but that's been my main interaction with it. And I really kind of came away with thinking, wow, you know, these aren't clouds. These are OSs. This is Google OS versus Amazon OS versus Microsoft OS. And they've got the Azure names and the Microsoft AWS. Yep. But these are software as a service systems that run in the cloud rather than on your desktop that people are developing for. And it's just going to be this fascinating thing to watch how people choose which of those operating systems they want to build their businesses on and, you know, which survives going forward.
Right. And I think some of the resistance, and I'm not an enterprise expert, but I watch people in enterprises, and I actually own an enterprise. I think enterprises, which at first were reluctant to put their business processes up there, are getting much, much more comfortable with it. And there's a lot of advantages to it. And then some of it goes down to, well, we've always been a Microsoft shop, so we're going to give our business to Microsoft. Google and Amazon have to fight a little bit harder to get that business. But there are so many advantages. You know, for a long time, for instance, we used QuickBooks accounting locally as an app. It makes much more sense to use it in the cloud as a software as a service instead of. But you know, that's the other thing to point out, Danny, is you don't have to go all. It is an operating system, but you can piecemeal it. You can treat it as, well, I'm going to use QuickBooks and Google Mail, and maybe I'll use a Microsoft Office. You can piecemeal it from all three providers. You don't have to go with one provider. Do companies do that? I would imagine we do.
No. If you're talking about running different suites and buying software as a service from different providers, sure. But if you're talking about architecting a business process or some back-end system in the cloud, you pick one because you're going to optimize for costs. The way you architect your system, it will depend on how on the platform you are, because maybe... And this gets into like things like databases and who charges what for what. But this is not something that you just redo overnight. It's actually a big investment.
So that's where I'm not familiar with how big enterprises do it. Because, for instance, you know, we're a company of about 25 employees and a bunch of contractors. We use Gmail, Google Docs, but some people are using QuickBooks. Some people are using Office. Some people, I mean, it's a real hodgepodge. We use HipChat, you know. But Microsoft, with its Teams, is trying to you know, win that Slack HipChat business. But I think there are a lot of enterprises that use Slack. Slack is a unicorn standalone app that you just integrate into whatever your other cloud is, right?
But I think it's the difference between whether or not you're using cloud applications or using cloud to develop your platform on. So,
right.
You know, if
so
you're
that's right.
Build
so Stacy said work.
App, yeah. You're probably not going to mix and match. But, yes. But just because your business app runs, say, on Google Cloud doesn't mean that your business might not also use Slack.
Our business app runs on Azure. Oh, yeah. And Drupal. So our production workflow runs on Drupal servers on a company called Black Mesh. That's our cloud for production, and we're a mess. But the reason is like a lot of companies, you did it all piecemeal. So we use HipChat for messaging. Yeah, sure, we could go to Microsoft's Teams because we're using Microsoft Office, or we could use Hangouts because we're using Google. But we're already in Slack. And I bet you a lot of companies that did it piecemeal, sure, if you're going to re-architect your business process, you're going to say, you know, go to Microsoft and say, let's build it all on Microsoft. But most people do it bit by bit, right?
Well, large companies will do these IT consolidation efforts.
Right.
And these are like 2 year,
millions of dollars, millions and millions,
Yeah. So it depends on what you're talking about. And some of them, you know, when I was at Time Inc., you know, we used Slack, and then we also like kept adding like Trello and random other things.
Yeah,
and
see, all bit, of a sudden, piecemeal, bit by bit. Yeah.
But then, as I was leaving, they wanted to consolidate a bit, and suddenly you weren't allowed to use certain apps anymore. So,
see, to me, every time they do that, there's this productivity hit.
Yeah, but there's also you're not paying for license fees. Right. You're assuming that you can get it, you can regain the productivity hit somewhere else. I don't know.
I know nothing about
enterprise. I hated the enterprise IT world.
Me too.
Go away.
I eschew that. Let's talk about CAPTCHA. Everybody hates CAPTCHA. Nobody likes CAPTCHA. Mm. If you're a robot, go ahead and try to figure out this number. The problem is robots probably do a better job than humans. And if they're of dubious security value, in fact, we've seen things like people would create an adult website that has a CAPTCHA to sign in, except it's not really their CAPTCHA. It's the CAPTCHA on some banking site, and they're just getting humans to solve it for them. And that's the whole purpose for the adult website, things like that. Google bought a Carnegie Mellon tool called ReCAPTCHA. Remember, ReCAPTCHA was a great idea because you got two words, one of which helped with book scanning, and one of them was actual CAPTCHA. But even that's so annoying. So now they've said, we don't really need CAPTCHA. Well, guess what? Google knows a lot about you. And they know so much about you that they could pretty much tell if you're a human or a bot just from how you use the computer, from your cookies, from your history. And so if you're trustworthy, there you won't even see a CAPTCHA. And if they have any questions,
yes.
That's where you get that little, you know, for a while they were just doing that little box that says, I'm not a robot, and you check it, and that was easy. Now they don't even put that up anymore.
It's sad, though.
This is great.
The loss of CAPTCHA is sad because I remember Luis Bonon, who I think is the author of ReCAPTCHA, talking about how great it was that people who wanted to watch porn were helping better improve the digitization of classical books.
At least they were getting something, right?
They were taking all these words out of books that they couldn't identify, and before you could watch your porn, you helped figure out whether this word in Shakespeare was correctly correctly scanned. So, you know, I mean, it's great. It's great that we'll save a little bit of time. Great. I guess you can get directly to your porn. But, you know, I feel sorry for the books.
Or this. They were also using it apparently for Street View, according to Ron Amadio in Ars Technica. I remember you would see sometimes numbers, like numbers on a house.
Yeah.
And that's what you were helping solve that. That's kind of clever. Google bought ReCAPTCHA in 2009 for that exact purpose, to help them with scanning books and Street View and so forth.
And, you know, so the money that Luis Van Aan made for that went to him creating Duolingo.
Right on, right on, right on.
Language learning. So, you know, it's, I think it's great because it's bringing contextual analysis into the real world in a way that people are going to not be creeped out by. So I'm like, do it.
Well, and doesn't, I mean, he's, this guy's smart because doesn't Duolingo, it's free because they're do, because you're doing eventually translations in a thing.
Translations.
Mm-hmm. I love it. That's to me, that's thinking. That's using your noggin. Anyway, because
it's
Google.
It's Mechanical Turking.
Mechanical Turking. That's exactly what it is. And if you don't know what that is, you're listening to the wrong show. I'm surprised how many people don't know about the Mechanical Turk, actually. I tell people about that all the
time. Okay, it's Amazon service where you can pay to get lots of people to do things for you, really.
Pennies. You pay pennies.
Yeah.
And they get
little
slices.
It's Amazon Cloud powered by humans.
Right. The Mechanical Turk. And it's named after.
Now I'm picturing all these little people on bicycles powering like the cloud.
It's like Black Mirror.
Oh, no, it's like a Black, there's a Black Mirror episode.
It's Black Mirror.
Absolutely.
So it
just a minute. I got to continue searching for these results and clicking on the ones that match. Okay. Oh, I've done my day. Now I can buy an hour of free ads.
It is telling, though, about how much Google knows about you that they don't really need a captcha to know whether you're you.
Yeah.
Just come on in. We know. Hey, Leo, you're cool. Come on in. It kind of goes back to that super cookie story where they, you know, each system is very uniquely identifiable based on the plugins you've installed, on the screen resolution, on how you move your mouse, on this huge number of factors that they can uniquely identify you. So they don't really need CAPTCHA. They got something better. Knowledge. Google is going to break ground on new headquarters. I always felt like these ridiculous headquarters like Apple's spaceship campus were really, they always used to say, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, when a company builds a massive corporate headquarters, that's really the company at its peak, and it's all downhill from there.
But why the armadillo design?
I don't know. This is in Mountain View.
Apple gave us a spaceship.
Didn't they originally have this kind of indoor-outdoor complex that they were going to build? What happened to that?
So you have to understand that our Googlers are very precious, and the more that we can put them into a contained, hermetically sealed environment, the less likely they're going to go out to the outside world, where they might be exposed to have to do chores on their own and not have everything provided for them, which reduces our work productivity. So
this is actually not nearly as grandiose as Apple's campus, which I think houses 20,000 employees. This is a tenth that size, 595,000 square feet, two stories tall. It won't be done for two or three years. It's actually not very far away from Apple Park. It's just kind of down the road from Apple Park if you want to come visit. Yeah, it does look like an armadillo, doesn't it? I want to see some.
I think that should be the new nickname. Let's all call it that.
I want to see some drawings for the inside.
The armadillo.
The armadillo.
It's Charleston East. Here's another fine story. So we're having trouble getting Congress to investigate the Russian connection to the election, but no problem. Justice Department's glad to indict four Russians for hacking Yahoo. Two of them worked for the FSB. And I think some Canadians were involved. The Justice Department said today they indicted four hackers responsible for a breach of half a billion user records at Yahoo. Two were Russian spies from the FSB. Two were, quote, hired criminals. they were looking for dirt on politicians, so it might actually be related to the DNC hacks. The spies wanted dirt on politicians. The hackers were scavenging for profits. All four charged with wire fraud, trade secret theft, and economic espionage. Karim Baratov was one of the hackers. He was in Canada. He was arrested yesterday. The other three are in Russia, which means it might be a little tricky to get them out of here. What was the final discount Verizon got for the hacking? Nothing, right? It was a tiny amount compared to the...
I thought it was like $325.
$325 million. It's not nothing.
Yes, sorry, not dollars.
$325.
There's a coupon. And a coupon for Denny's.
But, you know, I mean, it's a multi-billion dollar purchase. So, well, I guess it's better than nothing. We were talking initially about, like, maybe they'd get a billion off.
Mm. I think they asked for $925.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, the deal continues to go through, and Marissa Meyer apparently not going to get the golden handcuffs or the golden parachute that we thought. The rumors last year were like $53 million. I think she's only going to get $23 million.
$23.
But here's the thing that
should... Let me correct.
Oh, yeah.
What?
I was just going to... Verizon sought a $925 million discount, and it got a $350 million discount.
Yeah, that's what you said.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what you said, but I may be wrong. We could check the tape later. Here's something, though, that will get you a little mad. The new Yahoo CEO will make double Marissa Meyer's salary.
Oh, my God. It's like a comedy of errors.
Yeah, because maybe that was what went wrong. We just didn't pay the CEO enough to save Yahoo.
I'm still confused at what the CEO is going to be running. I've lost track of what parts
Alta
of...
Baba?
No, this is not Alt Baba. That's something else.
Oh, it is not?
That's not the part that Verizon got. That's what's left of Yahoo, and it really consists entirely of their stake in Alibaba. And maybe Yahoo Japan. I think a little Yahoo Japan stock sewed in there, too. So let's see what the paycheck is. A $23 million severance package, $69 million worth of unexercised stock options, $97 million of existing stock, which she can't sell till she leaves. So a total of $189 million. So when they took $20 million for the cyber attacks as a punishment, not a big deal. Not a big deal. $189 million. She'll be replaced by a former chief of IAC, Thomas McInerney. IAC owns dating sites like Match.com. He's going to get a starting base salary of $2 million to become Yahoo's CEO. That's double what Marissa Meyer was getting. And he'll also get $4 million bonus in his first year.
Jeebus!
That's 25%.
I'm in the wrong line of work.
I know! And you know, and exactly what does he run? He runs OMG.com and TV.com and Flickr and Yahoo Mail and anyway.
Katie Couric's show. Katie Couric and David Pogue, aren't they like $1 million salaries?
Are they really?
Just refresh my memory again. Yeah. So Alta Baba has nothing to do with the Alibaba stake that is actually going to be part of the Yahoo that Verizon isn't buying.
No. That's Altaba is. Oh, I'm confused. No, yeah. Altaba is the holding company.
But that's what McInerney is going to head up.
Oh, he's holding up Alta Baba? Oh, I am confused. Yeah. You've got me confused.
And she's going to step down from.
So Verizon doesn't need a CEO. Well, he's not doing anything.
Owned by Verizon, which.
What is he doing? He's just hanging out.
Alt Baba.
Alt Baba is what's left after Verizon acquires.
There we go. Here we go.
The bones.
Okay.
This is a new verb. I've never heard the verb concretes. Yahoo to be renamed Alt Baba after Verizon purchased concretes. Is that a word? You guys are writers.
No, that's that's headline jargon right there. That's like using eyes.
Alt Baba, according to the Washington Post, is a combination of the words, now wait for it, alternative and Alibaba.
Yeah,
so
it's what's left.
It's Alt Alibaba.
Alt Alibaba. Yep. So this guy isn't the head of what's left of Yahoo. He's the head of Alt Baba. That's even more ridiculous of a salary.
Yeah, so she's going to step down. So they're buying Yahoo, which we know and love as that thing we used to know and love. And that'll go to Verizon. And Marissa's not going to go with that. But because she is still technically the head of that right now, she is going to get paid a severance, because when the deal is done, they're going to be like, thanks for handling Yahoo over all those years. Here's the $23 million and you're set. But meanwhile, because she's still going to be head of the new Alt Baba company, she would have stayed there, but
right.
Apparently
she's
the Alibaba company is saying, right. Oh, we don't need you anymore either. So you can step down and we're going to put this Thomas guy in there, and we're going to pay him twice of what we're paying you because
he's actually
a man.
That makes sense, because Alibaba really is just an investment company at this point. And so he'll be running, as he did at IAC, a bunch of disparate brands. So he was a CFO at IAC. So he has some experience in running a holding company. All right. Not that anybody...
One of the things that I always thought Yahoo should have done was, instead of pursue a product strategy, pursue a financial kind of strategy. That didn't happen. So maybe that's what's going to happen with the remainder of it. I don't know.
We're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back with the one thing everybody who has an iPhone wants.
Android phone?
Yeah.
Sorry, a little laugh.
But first. Oh, they're all going, what are you talking about? You're crazy, Leo. You're crazy. Well, not crazy like a fox. Hang on. But first, a word from Curry, the real-life robot pal. Your first robot. Your kids are going to love Curry. I love Curry. Curry's so cute. She's knee-high. She has expressive, really expressive eyes. You really look at her and she immediately has a personality. You feel like you know there's something in there. She responds to human touch. She has face recognition. She'll know who's who. She maps your house and knows where things are. And you could say, this is the living room, Curry. This is the den. And then you could say, hey, go into the living room and see if the dog's on the couch. And she'll take a picture, send it back to your phone. She knows how to avoid obstacles like stairs and furniture. But she also can route around new obstacles because she's got LIDAR and recognition. She can totally navigate the place. She doesn't get tripped up on carpets or thresholds or door jams. She can walk around. She's got little tank tread feet. When she's low on battery, she just goes home to her dock and charges. She greets you differently when you come home, and she really greets you. She does not speak. This is really important. They decided not to make her too anthropomorphic. They wanted to be cute, cuddly, and they didn't want her to speak, so she beeps and boops and burps. Beep, boop, boop. But you can talk to her, and you can ask her to do things. For instance, you could say, wake me up in the morning and play my favorite podcast this week at Google. Curry will wake you up, start playing your podcast. You could say, Curry, follow me. And while you go into the kitchen to make breakfast or brush your teeth, she'll follow you around the house. She'll read the kids a bedtime story. And when you're not home, she can check on things. In fact, if there's a loud noise, she'll go investigate and take photos or video and send it right to your phone. Curry, she's so cute. I spent a little time with her down there at the Mayfield Robotics place, and I kind of fell in love. So I immediately put down a $100 refundable deposit. Curry is made by Mayfield Robotics, which is a division of Bosch. So they have a big manufacturing arm in Germany. She will be beautifully made. They're working on finalizing the software now, and they expect to have Curry in your house by this fall. If you want to get in line, put down the $100 refundable deposit. Curry will be $6.99, so $5.99 plus tax and shipping due at time of purchase. Curry, K-U-R-Y. You can find out more, read up on Curry. Some of the smartest roboticists are working on this. And I really think they got something here. Real live robot pal. H-E-Y-K-U-R-I. Hey, Curry. .com. And I'm torn because they said we're going to get one of the first off the line because I put my deposit down early. And I don't know. I think I'm going to have her in the studio coming and saying hi during shows and stuff like that. I'd like to have her at the house, too. I don't know.
So, you can send her to my house.
You want to visit? You can have a visit from Curry. We could share Curry. You have a 7-year-old, right? So I think that would be really perfect for Curry. You know why I want Curry? Because when our dog passed away, the nice thing about a dog, cats don't do this. We have cats too, but cats don't do this. Dogs kind of add a person to your house. You know, like your dog is like, and when Ozzy passed away, it got really quiet. And I felt like we need somebody, we need a presence in the house. And then shortly after I met Curry, I thought, you know what? A lot easier than a dog, but with much of the same kind of personality, and she's happy to see you and stuff. And I thought, she can't play fetch. So if that's important, you should get a dog.
Neither can my dog.
Yeah, I know. Ozzy didn't. He would get it and run away, you know. So I don't know. This is kind of a silly idea, but it's called the Eye. It's a Kickstarter for an iPhone case that's an Android phone. What do you think?
I don't understand this at all.
It's
I what? Really like. I have. Yeah, exactly.
What?
What? It's an iPhone case for an Android phone?
On the back is the Android phone. On the front is the iPhone.
Oh, I could use that.
Exactly. It's both.
Okay.
I could use that because I always carry around two phones.
Right. It's for
not anymore because it's a pain. So I just carry one.
I actually carry a Pixel and an iPhone.
Oh, sorry. My phone is literally ringing. Oh,
isn't that ironic?
I know. She's calling you now.
Is that a real phone or is that your cell phone making a real phone?
No, it's my cell phone making the noise. Yeah,
I like that.
That's cool.
The retro. Well, now you can have your Android phone make one ring and your iPhone make the other ring.
That could be handy. Although
how much does it weigh?
I don't know, but you know, there is a market for this. They were trying to raise money on Kickstarter. They wanted $95,000. They raised $235,000. In just a few days, they have 30 days left. So there's clearly a market for this. It's not super expensive. They plan to get it out at $189.
So the case holds both your phones.
It's a phone case. No, I think, well, that's a good question. Oh, maybe it's just a case that holds two phones.
But which Android phone does it hold?
No, it's actually an Android.
I thought it was a separate phone.
It's an Android phone that is a case for your iPhone. It's got a 5-inch AMOLED display.
Oh, it comes with an Android phone that can hold an iPhone.
For $95.
It's got
28 milliamps of power, always on display, two SIM slots, NFC. Unlike
what is this called? The Eye case?
The Eye, EYE. If you Kickstarter Eye, the smart iPhone case, you'll find it. 5-inch display, 256. You could add an SD card for up to 256 gigs of storage. It has an IR blaster, so you can use it for a remote control. Isn't that a crazy idea?
Can you take pictures with this thing? Or
I don't know. You're asking tough questions. Actually, I think this would get in the way of your camera.
That's what I would think. I mean, yeah. I'm okay with that because, well, sort of.
All you could do is selfies. All the time.
Oh,
all selfies
great.
All the time.
Okay.
They,
No, I've gone off it now. I don't need it.
You've gone off? You're done?
No, I don't need it.
You're done.
I'm not getting the point.
It's one of those strange, but it's weird they've raised so much money. Obviously, people want to do something like that. HTC is saying they will have an unexpected surprise on March 20th. Spring is coming. It's funny because I just got my HTC U Ultra phone. You know, that was the phone I thought I was getting last week, but it actually came.
Yeah.
And I kind of like it. You know what I really like? And I really wish that, you know, it's not a Pixel. The Pixel is the best Android phone. Although I got the beautiful blue and they have
that's nice.
Yeah, it's pretty.
That's a nice Samsung.
Yeah. It's not a Samsung.
Well, it looks like it on the back.
Knock it off. It has a 12 megapixel camera, and a 12 megapixel selfie camera. And actually the camera, you know, it has the Zoes, which I always liked of HTC. It has this is actually kind of fun. I can do a pano selfie. Let me go to the selfie panorama.
Oh, that sounds cool.
So I take a picture myself, right?
Yeah.
And then I pan it over. And then I pan it over the other side, and I get an extra wide selfie. Whoops!
Oh, you can't do that.
Oh, that's
kind of cool.
That changes the selfie game.
It changes your selfie game.
Could you just imagine if you had been at the Oscars? That would have been you could have fit everybody.
Everybody could be fit in, right?
Everybody.
That's what I was thinking.
Changes your selfie game. I really like it. It's a very good camera.
Do it like this with the iPhone, and that's
no. What else? It's not pure Android. It's very HTC Sensei. with the Blink feed and all that stuff, which, you know, I
liked
up,
the HTC Sense.
Got Google Assistant on it, too. That's nice.
You get Google Assistant on it. That's one of the phones that Google has now upgraded Assistant, which is good. It is 7.0, not 7.1.1, and it only has the January security update.
You know what really happened since January? That's probably good enough security.
Now you're being facetious, aren't you? That kind of bugs me. I really feel like that's kind of the minimum on an Android phone is you ought to be getting the monthly updates in a timely fashion.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons the Pixel is a winner. But the Pixel's kind of uninspiring design. It's nice, but it doesn't get you excited. This is a little more exciting, don't you think? A little prettier, a little more.
It's so pretty.
It's pretty. 5.7 inches.
No,
great screen.
I'm just going to say, I don't need the design. I don't care about the design because they're all going into the case. What I need, just if I can rant, I just need a decent credit card case, right?
Right.
That works for the Galaxy. That works for the iPhone. You know what you get for the Pixel?
What?
You got to try to find something that's basically glued on.
Yeah,
fabric.
You get the glue-on pouch.
If you want the Pixel to be successful, you build me a decent credit card case because I can't go back to having a wallet and I'm just done. Okay, my rant's over.
I think that's kind of a specialized
thing. But I don't care about
thing.
The design. I don't need the design. Ooh, look at how pretty. Who walks around with their phone not in a case?
Me.
Oh, my husband doesn't.
I don't like
really?
Cases.
Actually, doesn't a lot of my former you? Colleagues don't. It's his phone.
Too dangerous.
Now, when I hold it and drop it.
I've never dropped a phone.
I'm
very careful. Yeah.
Oh my God, my phone, like...
I hear Karsten knocking.
If my phone doesn't have a case, it's too slippery.
This also, one other thing, this has a little screen at the top. It's a dual screen thing. This is not a good idea. It has a little screen up here that could show you notifications. I have call buttons. I could play my music. It's just a little extra screen. I could see the weather. I could have little icons. The problem is, it kind of gets in the way when you're doing notifications. I mean, you still slide over it, but it just feels weird that it's there. Nevertheless, I mean that
I kind of like it,
and it's part of the always on. It's the always on screen. So, I didn't do it. But if I raise the phone, let's turn it off and raise it. Yeah, then you can kind of see. You can't see it very well, but that's the always on screen too.
Well, that's nice for at night too. There's a clock.
Yeah, it's a little clock.
That's what I like about the S7 Edge. You can run the clock along the
edge
at night.
I never liked the. I never thought that was that useful. But this is like the Edge, but it's on the top, basically. It's a little
The only thing I ever use the Edge for is for that clock. And I think it is well worth buying an $800 phone so I can turn it into a clock on the rare occasions I'm traveling. And I am unable to use my Android watch as my clock, which is the only thing I use that for on my nightstand now. So
I do wish
technology.
Yes?
I have a question.
Yes.
About clocks.
Yes.
Someone asked me, they want a smart alarm clock, and they asked if I had done any reviews about it, and I thought, I have a smartphone and an Echo, so I never thought about needing something. So
yeah, my Echo is my smart alarm clock.
What does a smart alarm clock mean?
I don't know what it means.
They want something. So this is what I asked. They want something where in the middle of the night, they can open their eyes and see the time. And then in the morning, it wakes them with an alarm and the news and whatever traffic feed or whatever.
See, that would be a great.
They don't want to have to ask for it.
That would be a great thing.
It's called an alarm clock. That's called radio.
That would be great, actually, if the Amazon Dot had a because I like that. When I wake up at the night, I want to know the time. And I've got my Android watch that sits there, and I can see it, and that's perfect. But an Amazon Dot that had the time built into it would be wonderful.
Over the Amazon Dot.
Well,
someone get on Kickstarter.
Or you could probably buy like a $29, like a $10 LED thing and just glue it to the end of your Amazon Dot.
We have the Betty.
And then it would give you the time.
We have the Betty here. And this was at Indiegogo, and Megan has one in the other room. We showed it today this week on iOS Today. It's an app-enabled alarm clock speaker that wakes you up with a music and a light. It does a slow glow wake-up thing, you know, where the light gets brighter and brighter.
Mm-hmm.
You can dim the clock to nothing, or you can have a very, it has an app-controlled alarm clock, an auto time sync, multiple USB charging ports on the back, which is very handy. I thought it was less than this. It's $100, but I guess that's what it was. You can hold a slot for your phone. It does not dock. It just sits in the slot because no one knows what the next...
Does it charge the phone?
No. Well, yeah, because there's a USB jack in the back, so you could put a cable.
But not USB-C?
It's whatever you want it to be. It's the old USB. So you'd have
and then
to
you run your own cable.
Yeah, you run your own cable. She's got that plugged in. And I don't blame them because how many times you go to a hotel, like the fine Driscoll Hotel in Austin, Texas, and they've got an iHome with a 30-pin dock on it. Like, it's like they don't want to buy another clock radio until somebody figures out what the next standard is going to be.
And I keep shoving my phone on there, and it's just, those pins will not go into the lightning connector.
And no matter what I do. So I'm supposed to carry around a 30-pin, the lightning adapter, before I go to the hotel? Every hotel I've been in ever has a 30-pin clock radio. And I'm sure when they put that in, they said, this is the height of modern technology.
That's Apple just being Apple.
It's just Apple being Apple. So this is I would tell her get the Betty.
Okay.
From Witty.
It's a him, but okay.
Tell him to get a Betty from Witty.
Is it shipping now though? Because I've been burnt on that Lily drone, and I don't want to buy anything else that's promised.
I believe it is. This was last December. It got funded December 9th of 2 years ago, 2015. Right. So
CNET has a review on it.
Yeah, we have one.
So.
You can actually buy it on Amazon.
Yeah, you can buy it on Amazon from Witty Design.
Although I got to feel like in about a month it's going to be outdated when Amazon Echo clock charge dock port comes out.
I love that idea of adding just a little clock to it.
It's easy. You should do that.
You could
our refrigerator has a clock. Why can't my smart thing have a clock?
I have a little tiny Mac Classic Apple Watch holder. It looks like a little tiny Macintosh. I put the watch in there and it looks like the screen on the Macintosh. And then, but you have to hit it.
That's great. It's because perfect. Like with the Android watch, Leo, with my aunt, because I have both of them there. With the Android watch, it's so annoying because you wake up in the middle of the night and you want to know what time it is, and it's just there in a dimmed mode always telling you what the time is. And how annoying is that? To whereas if I want to know the time with my Android watch, I can wake up, I can hit my desk, and then then it comes on and tells you the time, which is such a great feature. That's the kind of usability that you like from Apple. It just works.
Apple does not make this, but it is my favorite little gadget on my bedside table. It turns your Apple Watch.
They should make a version of that that constantly vibrates so that it would keep
remind you it's there. $13. It's from Elago, Elago. It's on Amazon. Elago W3 stand. I happen to love this, and it's nicely made. And the watch charger you put your watch charger puck in it, and it works, so it charges and everything. It's very nice.
It's cute.
Yeah, it goes into nightstand mode. That's actually my favorite smart clock radio. Anyway, I'm glad I could tell you about the Witty, because we did this on iOS today on Monday, and I thought, who would want that? But now I know, Stacy's friend.
There you go. Thank you.
Mark Zuckerberg announces the creation of a female user.
I was going to say, is this his baby?
What?
Yes.
Thank you, Gizmodo, for the weirdest headline of the week. So there's a new Zuck on the way. Max, their one-year-old daughter, will have a little baby girl. Yep. Mark posted on Facebook, where else? After our difficult experience having Mac, we weren't sure what to expect or whether we'd be able to. I didn't know they had a difficult experience, or whether we'd be able to have another child. When Priscilla and I first found out she was pregnant again, our first hope was the child would be healthy. My next hope was it would be a girl.
I always like the pictures that are posted. They're so natural.
Yeah, yeah. Strange dreadlock dog.
Like seven people walking around taking pictures of him.
Yeah, so you could tell Mark and Priscilla are always just sitting around like this with the dreadlock dog. And who, as far as we know.
And the timer on the camera went off
at the right moment. Yeah, there's like 15 lights. There's a stylist. There's a makeup artist. There's a PR person. There's a photographer.
The best thing is, they had a whole selection of photos to choose from, and they said, let's go for the one where his wife's eyes are closed, because it still look natural.
That's, I think you're right. Priscilla, it's your turn to have your eyes closed this time. I'll do it next time.
Oh, no.
They had difficulty in that they had a miscarriage or a couple
miscarriages. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh,
and
I'm sorry.
They were very open about that, which was a big deal for...
That is a very big deal.
It was a part of, like, erasing the shame of having miscarriages. Oh.
Well, I'm glad that they're expecting again. And that was shared March 9th. And, you know, I don't know how I missed that until now. Facebook mustn't be giving me the latest news from my friends.
If it's not politics, you don't see it on
You know, it's really true. I did not see that post. There was no Trump in it.
I could share something on Facebook now and be like, this is this huge change in Google. It's like two likes. It's
look at what he's done now. Yep. Yeah, boom. It's like that Monty Python spam kit skit. It's not got much Trump in it. It's got a little bit of Trump.
Oh, dear.
By the way, you'll be glad to know Facebook has banned the use of user data for surveillance.
Yes. Now, my big question is, how do they determine that?
I mean, they'll let political campaigns target you, but, you know.
Yes.
Well, yeah, because I didn't know this, but it makes sense. Like with the pipeline, the Dakota pipeline protests, they were using, mm-hmm. they said, actually, I don't think this actually happened because remember there was a whole thing, go check in at the Dakota pipeline protest, even if you're here in San Francisco or in Austin, because we want to confuse the police who are using people's check-ins to target them?
Yes, but it was also things like police would arrest protesters based on, like, saying they were going to be at a Black Lives Matter protest, or they were scouting people who were there and matching them up against people they had warrants against, and then they would go arrest them.
So that's, yeah, but I don't know how they stop that, really.
Don't either.
But at least it's no longer approved. I think
there was also companies that were doing it. They had like an API. They were using the API to produce some of that data easily and provide it to law enforcement.
Ah. Well, it reminds me of Tim Berners-Lee's post. He's the, of course, inventor of the web, which is, I think, now 28 years old. Its birthday was this past week, the World Wide Web. And he wrote at the time an open letter talking about the three issues he's increasingly worried about with the World Wide Web. And I think it'd be good to get you guys to weigh in on this. One, we've lost control of our personal data. I think that's pretty obvious. Widespread data collection by companies has, many of us agree to this, free content in exchange for personal data, but fundamentally we do not mind some information being collected in exchange for free services. But, he says, we're missing a trick. Our data is then held in proprietary silos, out of sight. We lose out on the benefits we could realize if we had direct control and could choose with whom. And I agree to share. I agree that this is a problem. I'm not sure how you solve it, but I think some have talked about having some sort of personal data silo, which you then contract to release your data to people for in return for benefits of some kind, whether it's money or free.
There's a company that does that.
I love the idea. I think
Neura.
It's too complicated.
Neura does it for health data,
right?
And they partner with device makers, certain device makers, to do that.
And so he also refers to
company trying to build that.
What Facebook was talking about, which is that, you know, governments can use this information. Bloggers can be arrested or killed. Political opponents can be monitored. And it creates a chilling effect on free speech. So I'd agree with point one. I don't know exactly how you solve it. I agree with all three points. I just think that the points two and three are very problematic. It's too easy for misinformation to spread on the web. Who would disagree with that? But I don't think any proposal to get rid of misinformation on the web is doable, only because one man's misinformation is another man's truism. And who's going to make
that? Not on Google. Not anymore.
Google, the one true source.
No, that's, I can talk about that change if you're not going to get to it.
I would like to talk about that because Google had a problem, especially with the Google Home, where you would say, you'd ask Google Home, is Obama planning a coup? And it would say, yes, as a matter of fact, it is. Obama is, because they were pulling news from fake stories.
That was just true. I mean, that's factual. But
well, that's kind of my point. Who's going to decide this? I guess Google feels like they can.
But that's the thing they announced this week.
If you ask them now, it'll just say, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about, which is actually worse. Is Obama spying on me through my microwave oven? I don't know what you're talking about is a scary answer. So what's new then to this story?
Well, so they announced yesterday that, Google has this like army of what they call quality reviewers. It's about 10,000, over 10,000 contractors.
Wow.
And what these people do is they are given real searches. They're told search for this and then evaluate the results that came up and rate how well you think they satisfied the search you did. So if you were to search for, is the sky blue? Someone would do that search and they'd look at the results. And if there was one that was saying red, they'd say this didn't satisfy it and so on. And they try to rate how the quality of the results they get so that Google can take all that data and then go build algorithms to improve the things that are weak. And so Google's added this new thing for all the raters to start using, which is called the offensive. Upsetting offensive content. And this was designed now because, you know, in December you had these examples like when you would search, is the Holocaust real? You would get these Holocaust denial sites dominating the search results. And so now what they're telling the raters is do these kinds of searches. And if you find stuff that looks offensive, looks like it's designed to promote hate, flag it as offensive or upsetting. And then they want to go back and use that data now to then try to better identify content like that and prevent it from coming up. When you do these kind of factually oriented searches, so you're not getting this offensive material. Now, if you really want to get to that white supremacist site and you know it by name and you type it in, you would still get that because Google would say, well, you're explicitly asking for it. But if you were to do a search for, you know, are white people inbred, the assumption in that case is going to be that you're looking for information about it. You're not looking to reconfirm any preconceptions you might have. And they're going to go towards, we're not going to try to give you this offensive or, you know, inflammatory material. We're going to try to give you, you know, factual, thought out, you know, reasonable material to come back. And so that may help with some of the stuff. It may also help with that sort of what I call the one true answer problem that you talked about. The coup thing came from me because I was like, it was the day that the Trump stuff was going crazy on the wiretapping. And I had typed that into my phone and I could see, wow, it's and I did a stream of these kinds of examples, and we've had any number of people doing these kinds of examples now. But they also said, and part of these changes is that they're also trying to get the evaluators to go a little bit heavier on making sure that stuff is accurate rather than authoritative. So apparently sometimes you can get these sites, and they gave me one example I didn't get into, but, you know, people would be doing these searches and like for Hitler's daughter and I don't think that was the answer. There was some other search that they would do, and the raters would tend to lean towards saying, well, it was very authoritative. the site seemed to have all these reputation threshold, but whether or not the facts were correct was another thing. And so, you know, the emphasis now is going to be more on the fact-checking aspect of it so that you can flag things that are not seeming to be factually correct.
How well do you think this will work?
It's one of those it remains to be seen types of things. They said that they did a small trial of this and that, in fact, they rolled out an update that was designed to deal with the Holocaust kind of search. And, you know, as I noted in my story, that stuff has changed. Now, one of the reasons the Holocaust search changed is because enough people were upset that you were getting these terrible answers that they started writing good things to explain that, yes, the Holocaust really happened. Here's factual information.
So they changed the result merely by changing the web.
But there were other searches, like when I would search for was Obama born in Kenya, the top result I used to get on Google was of YouTube video where he's, you know, explaining that and admitting on video that, yes, he was born in Kenya, except that he didn't do that. They just took a video of him talking and someone edited it and put in words, wow. Right? Wow. So that's no longer at the top. And in fact, the results are much different when you search for that now than when I looked before.
How much energy are these content raiders going to put into researching that video? I mean,
well,
is it their job then to go look at every bit of content on the net and verify its accuracy?
That's going to be part of it, apparently, is that, and they're already supposed to
be doing
something.
Well, they don't have enough people then. Anyway. They need more people.
But the goal isn't that they have to research every single fact that you could possibly search on Google. I mean, Google's dealing with hundreds of millions of searches per day. The goal that they're hoping is if they can identify things that are common to pages that tend to give false facts, that they have enough signals that they can build either the human written algorithms or the machine learning can identify it. That's still a tough challenge because, you know, how do you figure out what's true? And they may have more success in identifying signals from content that's not as trustworthy and being able to filter more of that stuff out and knowing that it happens. But like another example I gave when you did the factual thing is you could ask, is Donald Trump paranoid, right? And I think this will still work on Google Home and the Google Assistant, but it would come back and say, Donald Trump is paranoid. Donald Trump is mentally ill. And okay, I'm not a Trump fan. I certainly think he's paranoid and probably mentally ill. But from a medical standpoint, I'm not a doctor. And we don't have any medical things that have said that. And in fact, the article wasn't a medical thing that was saying that either. It was a column that was written by a little known publication called Slate, which is a highly authoritative site.
See, here's the problem. Here's exactly the problem.
Yeah. So
this is impossible. And the potential for abuse, mistakes, and a mess is just way out. I commend them for trying to solve it. But boy, this doesn't.
You're not going to get perfect. You're never going to get perfect facts that report. But what they may have success on doing is at least reducing the things where you get these really offensive things that come up. Where you search for "are women evil," and the first result you come up is this weird diatribe where someone's telling you why they're all evil and they're prostitutes.
Well, I think it's telling that the tag they're using is upsetting, offensive, not wrong.
Yeah.
You know, right. That you're saying this is upsetting or offensive, but that's a culturally defined, judgment. It's highly subjective.
You need to use cultural norms in your own locale.
They have 200 pages of guidelines, by the way. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think, Stacey?
We'll see.
Is this a good idea?
So I was going to back it up just a bit to this idea that Tim Berners-Lee was saying which is it's too easy for misinformation to spread on the web.
Right. This is Google's way of trying to solve that, right?
Right. So I don't actually think, what if you take that and say, no, it's actually not any easier than it has been. What it is, it's more scalable.
Right.
So it spreads farther. So it was always easy. Like anybody who's been in high school can say, hey, it's so easy for misinformation to spread, right? Somebody says something and then everybody suddenly believes that, you know. Right. I'm thinking of terrible things, but
I know I'm trying not to say them either.
I'm like, oh, that's
it never
bad.
Happened
but
with that hamster.
Right.
Yeah, gerbils are a good example. Gerbils are an excellent example.
Gerbils.
Yeah.
So I think the scalability is the problem. It's not that misinformation is any easier or harder. It's just that it gets to more places quickly.
Right.
And so how do you solve that?
When
what we've created is
the ultimate publishing medium that goes to everybody, that everybody has access to. This didn't come up in the past because only people with lots of money could have printing presses or TV and radio studios or motion picture studios. But now everybody has access, the means to publish, and the publishing that they do can get to everybody. And inevitably, you're going to have a huge amount of crap. And I don't understand how you propose to change that because...
Well, I mean, I think you've got twin problems. You've got the virality or the viral nature that some of this stuff can spread, and in particular on Facebook. And I think they have a challenge as to, is there more they can do to
Their challenge is different than Google's because they're not a search engine.
I know, but they kind of, they're two different things, but they go hand in hand. So are there things they can do to better flag stuff to say to people, maybe you need to think twice about this or just stop outright false stuff that you can tell? But then the challenge Google has is these things aren't viral on Google, but Google has a different issue where people who actually may want to go to research this stuff get exposed to like one-sided things or just completely, you know, non-authoritative stuff. And then it's like, so now they can't even debunk the stuff that they may have heard on a viral nature.
My big problem.
What if instead of...
Go ahead.
So what if instead of looking for search terms, Google spent more effort grouping like information together? And by like, you get more perspectives. And I'm thinking of... So... Kind of like your Snopes results would always come up when you did a search for something, right? That sounds plausible.
That's kind of what Facebook's doing, right? Facebook is putting a flag and saying here's what you might want to read to, or something like that. That's what. But the problem is it's still so subjective. Here's why I have a problem with it, and I'll let you finish. I'm gonna let you finish, but first, here's why I have a problem with it. It is, and I was really worried when we started using this label fake news. And immediately the thing I was most worried about happened, which is we have our fake news. Suddenly they're using the term fake news to describe what we think is real news. And that's the problem, is as soon as you start labeling stuff fake news, the whole thing goes out the window because everybody has a different opinion on it. And you and I might agree that there are facts and there are non-facts, but that's a small subset of this overall problem. And I don't know if – is Google supposed to be a fact engine or is that's a misunderstanding of it, I think. Google's supposed to find whatever you're looking for. And that's the problem with snippets and that's the problem with the knowledge graph. They're not. They're a search engine. They're supposed to enable you to find something you're looking for, some piece of content on the net, and they shouldn't be judging the factual nature of it. I think that's a mistake. Okay, I'm sorry.
So I'm going to throw a thesis I've got out here for you, because this is something I've actually been thinking a lot about with Google. And my thought is it needs to move from being an advertising company to being a services-oriented company.
Yeah, I agree.
And that helps solve this problem in some ways because a service it would provide clearly is factual information, right? Not alternative facts, just facts. And it's becoming important not just because of this issue, but also because of, you know, IoT, its emphasis on machine learning, in the way we're going to start interacting with devices that don't have screens, right? And you can't, in a voice world, be a search engine. You have to provide a service, and that service would be the facts or the truth.
Why can't it just be a search engine?
Well,
if I want to know what the... So here's a search engine. Let me give you an example. Let me give you an example. God exists. Some people will say that's factual. Some people say that's not. It's not Google's job to determine that.
Correct. And in fact, I've used that before when people have said, well, we should only have factual stuff, and they get really on a high horse about it. And I said, okay, so when I search for that exact type of thing, is God real? I should not get any religious information coming up, because by its nature, religions are based on faith, not fact. And so if you're going to say you can't only have factual information in Google –
Google should not be weighing on the accuracy of whatever its search results show. It should be pure search results.
No, but I think there are verifiable facts.
There's no such thing.
There are verifiable facts in the world.
Well, I think there are things as search results.
There's no such thing as pure search results. Sorry.
Why not?
There are such thing as verifiable facts.
I think it's the exact opposite. I think that if a search engine...
You know Google bombing?
So
that changes what a search results in, and that's manipulated.
It's a combination of things. You have some things that you search for that are verifiable facts. For example, if I search for who invented homework, That should be a verifiable fact, right?
You shouldn't get some guy in 1905.
Right. And the Google is reporting and listing that it's this guy in 1905, this number, you know, and it's like, no, that's just wrong. Like, it's not even a fake news political debate thing. It's literally just wrong. And it's embarrassing for Google when it's trying to provide facts and does it in that kind of thing that is actually showing misleading facts.
Google should be saying do not use Google to determine facts. You could use Google to search for sources and read the source, and then you as a human have to decide whether that is factual or not. Google should not be the arbiter of facts. It's a search engine.
I agree with you.
That's like saying...
I agree with you in the sense that it would behoove Google and everybody to understand that we all need better critical thinking skills, and that Google is just a tool, like a library was a tool, and that you need to go through on many things that you search for and actually do research.
Google's a card catalog. The card catalog in the library should be able to find completely specious, fallacious BS books just as much as it finds real books. That's what the card catalog does. Google should be the card catalog for the internet, not some librarian saying, well, you know, that's not true. Well, that is true, because that way lies danger.
People don't think of Google that way.
Google's job should be educating people.
No, this is the same problem we have with like Tesla and calling its car a self-driving car when it's really autopilot, and you know, then Tesla getting mad at people for not paying attention while they drive their car off the road. I mean, tech companies and all companies have a history of misstating what they do, and we buy into it.
Google's pretending it's Yahoo, which was a human-generated index. But that didn't scale, did it? I mean, you can't do
it. Let me put it to you in a different way. So search engines' biggest challenge had been, up until recently, that they had to deal with adversarial information. And by adversarial, I mean that was the term that they would use. But what I mean is they had to deal with spam. That unlike our other research tools before we had search engines, they would go through a small collection of books and trusted sources, and no one was actively trying to mislead them. Right?
Then and that's what Google bombing also is. So you could say
not just Google bombing.
No, I understand. But you could say Google bombing is a form of spam. So that's
right. But when search engines came along, you had people actively trying to subvert the search listings to get poor quality information, but to get a top rank and make money off it. And that was Google's claim to fame, was it had better protection against that.
Right.
It used links. It tried to figure out authoritative information, and that's why it wiped off all the other search engines by and large from the map and took over. But now we're in this weird situation where it's not just outright spam and people doing keyword stuffing and buying links and all that stuff. It's that you have a flood of unauthoritative information that's coming in. And it doesn't relieve search engine from the duty of trying to pick out the best of the resources that are there. And I think that's the thing. There are some things where Google could tell it is a fact. And we could say these are facts and they should provide that. There's also a greater chunk of things where we don't know the direct answer to it. It's not even just maybe politically charged or, you know, where you are on the political spectrum. It's just that we might not know what the right answer is if you want to fix something or if you want to buy a refrigerator or whatever. So you need a variety of resources. But the challenge is that you get into some of these kinds of things where you're not – like with the Holocaust search – you weren't getting a variety of resources trying to help you understand whether the Holocaust is real or not. You were getting pages that were heavily dominated by denial stuff.
Okay.
Because the people who write about the Holocaust, never occurs to them that there are other people out there who are searching for things that is not real and writing content to explain why it's not happening. So there's a lot of stuff that's going to be changing. None of it is going to be solved instantly by Google. There's a lot of the onus that remains on human beings to do it. But they do need to do something. They do need to look at this, because it is a problem that in the end causes them to lose faith. Until now, Google by and large has been able to go along and say, we have the best search results, unquestioned. They're like, oh yeah, Google's results are great. And when you do one of these searches and you get one of these featured snippets and your jaw goes, you realize, wow, Google didn't know what it's talking about. And that is not a good thing to be in if you're a search engine.
Well, I agree with you. Spam is the problem. But I would also submit Google made a mistake when it said, well, we should give you featured snippets. Because that's saying we're going to give you the facts. And that's a mistake.
I know, but that's their key product differentiator between Amazon Echo and Google Home. Otherwise, you might as well just buy the Echo.
I know. They shouldn't be doing that. But so I think, Stacey, I agree with both of you in the sense that Google bombing is a form of spam, that you're going to get skewed search results because some groups are intentionally or maybe even not intentionally flooding the web with you know, a position. I just worry that if we start getting in this, I don't want Google to arbitrate whether something's a fact or not. That gives them way too much power.
Well, maybe it's go to our app to see more results. I mean, maybe you get that equivalent. I don't know what to say. I mean, the problem is we're going to be moving into a world where we have a limited output, right? We don't have a screen everywhere that you can see things and interact with things.
Yeah, why snippets, right?
How do you design for that?
Right. That's a good point, too. Yeah. All right. Good conversation. This does go right back to the Tim Berners-Lee because he's kind of saying this. My problem was it's too hard, I don't understand how it's going to happen without introducing some other form of bias. His third point is even more difficult, which is political advertising needs transparency and understanding. He's worried about how the sophisticated ad networks, particularly on Facebook, are able to serve thousands of different ads and you don't see all the different ads, only the people they're targeted to. And targeted advertising, he says, allows a campaign to say completely different, possibly even conflicting things to different groups. That's undemocratic. He says sees that as a problem. I'm not saying I don't see it as a problem, but I don't see how you solve that because of, well, you got to have political speech is a form of free speech. So these are thorny problems. But I think they come along with what you invented, Tim Berners-Lee invented, which was a publishing medium open to everyone.
Right. It's not a bug. It's a feature.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you created.
Yeah.
And I hate to see.
But I blame Tim Berners-Lee.
Well, now he's saying we ought to regulate this. And I don't know how you regulate it because by its very nature, any form of regulation is going to introduce a bias that some people are going to say that's wrong.
We'll find ways to regulate stuff in the ways that we find ways to regulate things in the real world. For example, with the political ads he's so concerned about, very simple to say, you know what? If you're going to create political ads and you're a political campaign, you have to post all the political ads you're running in a place that are accessible. That's a simple thing to do.
Yeah, that could be done by law. That's a great idea.
Speech.
Yep.
You know, that's easy to do.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
There's other stuff that
it's like a fairness doctrine for the internet age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's actually a great idea. No hidden ads. Every ad has to be viewable at a publicly accessible site. I think that's a great idea. And then you have to hope that the press has lots of time to go through your 50,000 different ads. By the way, speaking of big numbers, according to CBS News, study reveals 48,000 Twitter accounts are actually bots. That seems low. I know. Maybe
that's
I'm wrong.
That's it?
University of Southern California.
Million. That's because you hate Twitter.
Did I say 1,000? Million.
Yeah.
That would be low. University of Southern California says 9 to 15% of Twitter accounts are bots controlled not by humans but by software. So since Twitter has 319 million monthly active users, 48 million would be bots.
Yeah, but to be fair, I mean, at least they're very politically active.
Those bots voted, let me tell you.
I was going to say that there are some useful bots out there. Like
not
I have
all bots
I follow a couple Twitter bots.
I have a bot. I have a Twitter bot.
You have a Leo bot?
It's called Leo bot, as a matter of fact, yeah. It's pretty benign. I think it's Chief Twit bot, actually. Chief Twit bot, yeah. I call it Leo La bot. But all it does is announce when new shows come out. Yeah, that's a combination of if this then that and Zapier scripts.
Right.
It used to announce when I drove up. That's when I was driving a internal combustion engine vehicle with an automatic.
An ICE.
Oh, you love it how Tesla people call them ICEs. ICE.
I do.
You Tesla people. Actually,
Tesla people.
Lots of Tesla news, right?
Or just Elon Musk news?
Well, there's always Elon Musk news. There's some question about whether one of the two people who will be going to Mars next year via SpaceX, is one of them might be Elon Musk. I don't think we should let Elon go. We can't afford
that's sort of the end game, really, isn't it?
He won't say.
That was sort of like James Cameron deciding,
so badly.
I want to make Titanic. It wasn't because he wanted to make a movie about the Titanic. He just wanted to dive down there and needed something to pay for it.
Elon just wants to go to the moon.
Yeah.
He also...
I'm okay with that, personally.
He says, I can fix South Australia's power network in 100 days or it's free. He wants to build a 100-megawatt battery storage farm for Australia. I guess Southern Australia has energy woes. So this battery thing is actually, the gigafactory and Elon's capacity of making low-cost, high-capacity batteries seems to be exploding. Well, that's a bad word to use with batteries, but...
The power thing's just their own fault because they're on that weird, we're a half hour off of the rent of Australia. That's their doing. If they would just be 1 hour, not this 1:30 thing, then it'd be fine.
Really?
No.
They really are a half hour off.
He's joking. He's teasing.
No, I'm not joking.
Well, I know it's true, but it's not what the power problem.
But it has nothing to do with the power.
Yeah.
Okay, I was like, how does this affect power at all?
Well, the sun goes down earlier, half an hour earlier.
Yeah. There we go. That's right. So it's dark longer.
Yeah, it's dark longer. Tesla is looking to raise $1.5 billion to help make Model 3s. Elon will buy $25 million of that. If you want to get some stock in the Tesla, this might be a good time to do it. You and I already invested in Tesla, Stacy, by buying.
I'm not.
That's enough.
Well, so legit question. Go on.
I did the anti-investment and just bought the Bolt, so I don't need.
No, that's a good one. How do you like it?
Yeah. I love the Bolt.
I really want to get a Bolt. I liked the Volt, which I first saw at South by Southwest, but that has a little gasoline assist. The Bolt is all electric. And
yeah, it's all
250-mile range. Good range,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Have you been getting that?
Well, we don't drive it that far. So occasionally we'll go into LA, but the nice thing is all I can drive into LA, it's, 45 miles away and come back 45. I don't even think about it, right?
Isn't that nice?
I did do a trip this past weekend where I went up to Santa Clarita and I stayed overnight to go on this tour thing. And that involved me trying to find a fast charger because I didn't know if I'd have enough range to get back with all the trips I wanted to do. And I probably would have made it. But
Elon really was smart. That fast, the supercharger, really smart.
But I did find one and it topped my car up to 80% in 30 minutes.
So you can do that on a Bolt? You can find a fast charger?
Yep.
Is it a 40 amp? What is fast for a Bolt? 72, 80?
The fast charger is a DC. I think it's 50 amp.
Okay, DC.
And it supposedly can add 90 miles in a half hour. So, and then at home we have the one that does 25 miles in an hour. It's been wonderful. And I think the other thing for me, it's just been like driving a smart car. It's like driving an electric car is like having a new smartphone or something. I don't know. But it's been great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm really impressed.
Stacy, when you do your panel, I want you to talk about the audio synchronization that Amazon is proposing to offer to the Echo and the Dot. This could be bad for Sonos, right?
Well, especially if they don't have the Sonos integration done.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to ditch my Sonos speakers.
No, they're good speakers.
But audio synchronization.
That's the secret sauce for Sonos, right? Let me see if I get.
Yes. Doesn't Google Home already do that?
Secret sauce for Sonos is. Yeah, Google Home does that. So secret sauce for Sonos is actually its Wi-Fi network and how it works. But this is more a response to Google, I think.
Oh, I didn't realize Google Home did that.
In the Google Home.
So let me look, because apparently in some people's Amazon Echo apps, it's not called the Echo app, it's called the other word, the A word app, In under Smart Home, you're getting synchronized audio. So let me just look and see if I've got it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Smart Home. Nope. Don't got it. But wait a minute. Oh, maybe I would if I connected. It says use groups to control multiple devices at once. I don't even know about that. There's groups, huh?
Oh, I have groups.
See, then look in your A word app, and see if you could make your groups synchronized.
My A app takes forever to load.
Oh, are we avoiding saying the word because we don't want to set off people's devices?
Thank you, Danny. I had to send out a memo.
Because we're...
I did a hit on the biggest station in L.A., KFI, with Bill Handel. And he kept saying the A word. And I said, Bill, you got to stop that. You're buying people's stuff. You're triggering. The problem is people like him think this is funny.
Yeah.
It's not funny.
It's not funny.
So is it under Smart Home, you said?
Yeah, supposedly, yeah. If you get it. It's one of those.
Yeah, so mine does not have it.
You don't have it yet. Okay. So how well does the Google Home do that? I only have one, so I never tried it.
I can't be bothered to do
it. I don't either.
I'm not an audio file.
I did just discover.
I like the Echo, because the Echo, I think, has great speakers. And once I put that in, my wife's like, this is great. So
I don't think the Echo has great speakers.
What I have done is I can use the Google Home in the bedroom, and you say things like, play this in the kitchen. And then the music comes on in the kitchen.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, so that's nice.
If I want one of those. I only have one, so I can't really test any of those things.
Yeah, but I guess they can both play the music at the same time.
Chromecast Audio was supposed to have that feature, too, where it would... See, the trick is sync, because if they're not perfectly synced, you know, if there's any latency at all, it sounds like you've got this big echo box.
Mm. Right. It's awkward.
Awkward. Awkward, to say the least.
I was going to ask if you guys had... I have noticed that my Google Home, when I ask it to play songs, it has given me some really random results lately.
You're just saying generically play music? You're not saying what kind of music?
Don't judge me. I asked it to play... What was it? Oh, God. Oh, I asked it to play Afterglow by Churches. And it was like, I can't do that. But if I asked the Echo to do it, it did it. And then I asked it to play, like, I can't remember this. It's an Usher song. I asked it to play All Right, I Don't Mind by Usher. And instead of playing me the actual Usher song, it played me a karaoke version.
Oh, this is a big problem.
That's weird.
This is one of the things the new Pandora music, they said, we're going to try to solve. Everybody has access to roughly the same 40 million songs. The problem is there's a lot of karaoke, covers, you know, bad versions of songs. So you'll say, you know, play the Beatles, Here Comes the Sun, and you'll get some Japanese cover band doing it. And so Pandora says, we're going to try to eliminate those from our music. If they do that, that would be reason enough to pay for $10 a month for Pandora's new streaming service. That's just the problem.
Echo has been great about giving me, generally, it gives me the right results.
What music service is it tied to? Spotify for you?
Spotify.
Okay, so that just means Spotify is better than Google.
Are you not using Spotify?
Well, I am using Spotify on Google. So it's the exact same service.
Oh, well, that's weird.
That's what's so whack.
Oh, that's whack. Well, that's really whack.
So.
Afterglow can be hit or miss, says Reverb Mike in our chat room. I'm not sure if he's talking about the song.
Home Assistant problems.
Yes, don't you hate it? I saw a video that made me feel terrible on, I think it was on Facebook, where it's a bunch of poor Africans standing in front of their tiny little sad buildings or saying, I just need another Wi-Fi router. I can't get throughout my house. Or don't you hate it when your Google Assistant just doesn't make you breakfast? And it's like all these first world problems, and it just makes you feel so bad. That's why I'm selling all my stuff. It's going to all be for sale. I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, your picks of the week. You in the mood?
Sounds good.
Got something good?
I'm game.
Are you game?
I think I do.
I'm game.
I kind of already did mine with the phone, but I'll see if I can find something else. I tipped my hand too early. Our show today brought to you by Segment, the data hub platform. Now, It's hard for me to describe what this is, but let me put it this way. If you've got a website or an app and you collect analytics, in most cases, like in our case, you might have multiple little JavaScript one-liners in your website. We've got Chartbeat and Quantcast and Google Analytics and a bunch of different things, you know, for different analytic purposes or to measure how people use the site or get heat maps. And the problem is you get all this engineering time and all this interaction and you get all these bugs. So Segment makes this completely simple. You think of it as plumbing. It's the data hub platform that collects and unifies and acts, makes it possible for you to act on your customer data across all of your websites, your mobile apps, your cloud platforms. Instead of putting stuff, you put one bug on your page in your app on your cloud platform, and then you go to your dashboard at Segment, segment.com/twit, and you say, okay, I want to add, and then you add Google Analytics or Optimizely or Mixpanel or whatever tools, hundreds of choices, you create the plumbing on their website. The other beauty part of this is the Segment app, you know, tag will continue to collect data even if one of these is down. You don't lose any bits of data. And when the site comes back up, Segment will feed it the data that it missed. So there is one platform that labels writing integration code once. It's a single, straightforward API that unifies your data, your performing analytics on any platform from Marketo to MailChimp. And that's just M's. Companies that use it, Atlassian, Intuit, New Relic, and Reuters. You can do advertising analytics, A/B testing, attribution, and on and on and on. And really, there's so much, if you look at the site, there's so much stuff. I want you to go to segment.com/twit. Save time on engineering, save money on engineering. With Segment, a single developer can easily integrate a new analytics tool for the data-driven account manager, another for the app-happy marketer, another for the data scientist who needs the flexibility of a single unified data warehouse. You can dig deeper in your data, bring data from any source, import historical data, customize what ends up in your data warehouse of choice. It is awesome. Customer data platform that both developers and analysts love because of its simple, elegant API and that complete partner ecosystem that just page after page. It works with everything. Zendesk, Intercom, AppNexus. I can go on and on and on. Spend your time using your analytics data and acting on it, not struggling with custom integrations. Thanks to Segment, your CEO will love your quickly deployed integrations. She might even give you a smooch. I love your quickly deployed data integrations. You'll also love, as a CEO, you'll love how much money you save. 8,000 of the world's best companies use Segment to drive growth and revenue, and now you can try the Segment team plan free for 3 months. 3 months free at segment.com/twit. Segment.com/twit. Simplify your life, simplify your engineering, simplify your analytics. Segment.com/twit. Danny Sullivan, Search Engine Land, is here. Stacy Higginbotham, Stacy on IoT, is here. Jeff will be back next week. Why don't we let the guest start? Danny, your pick of the week.
So I'm going to pick my own article that
Please do. Nice.
It's your guide to Google Assistant and the Google Search app. Oh. And if you have a Google Android phone, if you have an Android phone, you're starting to get Google Assistant. And I've seen it finally roll out to my Galaxy S7 and one of my Moto Plays. So your phone, there you have it. But it's a big change. Probably the most dramatic change is going to be that if you're used to hitting the home button and then either speaking or typing your search, that's changed. Now all you can do is speak your search to the Google Assistant. And you may like that or you might find it very awkward. Google Assistant is sometimes very useful at giving you answers, and then sometimes it's kind of a pain, especially if you try to do the tasks that it said it was going to do way back when and it doesn't turn out to do some of that stuff as well. But it's definitely coming to your phone, and so if you're wondering what's happening with it, the guide is designed to explain to you where that's going, what's that's happening. And then I'm also kind of refreshing your memory about, well, what if you want to use the Google app? People may remember using Google Now. Google Now is not part of the Google Assistant. You actually have to have the Google app separately, either on iPhone or an Android, to get it. And, oh, by the way, it's not called Google Now anymore. It's just called predictive search card things.
Oh, that's terrible. But
I know.
I hate them. I hate them so much.
It. The thing that Google had that they used to call Google Now on Tap, that screen search, that still exists. And it still exists even if you have Google Assistant. In the past, you used to be able on any screen. You could hold down the home button and it would tell you and things related to what you were looking at. You can still do that with Google Assistant. It just kind of involves a little bit of activating it and then swiping up. It can be a little tricky. And just a few other things in terms of how you can do your searching. It's like basically all ways to search using Google on either the Android or the iPhone in this new world of the Google Assistant being out there.
I actually love the Google Assistant. And I only had it on the Pixel. And that, to me, if you're going to get an Android phone, you want to make sure it's one that supports Google Assistant. Yeah. As Google's basically said, though, it's going to be, if you can get Nougat, you're going to have Assistant, right? Eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, I was really pleased when I opened up this HTC Ultra, and it was there. I was like, yay. Very happy. So how do you do Now on Tap? Because it's the same thing, pressing and holding the home button.
If you hold the home button, and then after Google Assistant launches, you got to swipe up on the assistant itself.
It's crazy.
I don't even... It's a little bit complicated.
Yeah. No one uses Now on Tap, so that's the
case. No, you're not going to use it anyway, so you're not going to worry about it.
Never. The only time I've ever seen it is because I accidentally held the button too long. It's the only time I ever see it.
I think the biggest shift really will be for people who are used to holding the home button as a way of activating search, and they would type. You just can't do that anymore. And figuring out where the Google Now cards. That's the hardest thing for me is like you got the Google Assistant, but then you got Google Now, and they're like in two separate areas, and I kind of liked them when they were united in the Google search app, but I imagine at some point the Google search app itself will get more Google Assistant-like.
Yeah, what I just did is I put a Google button on my front page, which launches the Now cards. Or if you use the Pixel launcher, you could swipe left and the Now cards are still there. Yeah. I just don't use the Pixel launcher.
You guys, this is stressing me out.
Oh.
Stress?
What kind of phone do you use, Stacey?
I have the Nexus 5X.
Oh, that's right. You have an old
one. We have this conversation every week.
Time. I know. Well, everybody has a different phone, and I should have a database who has what, but that would be normal people.
And you should keep it in your head.
In normal people call my mind, but I have no mind, so I don't know. What is your pick of the week, Stacey? Oh, by the way, I should mention... That article Danny mentioned is on searchengineland.com.
Yeah.
And you could Google, as I did, your guide to using Google Assistant on searchengineland.com, and you'd find it. Very helpful. As always, you're great. Now, Stacey, your pick of the week.
Now, this is my pick. I actually installed this, so I can't show it to you, because now it's in a wall. Show the website. So this is a Zigbee-based Lutron Pico remote. And you don't have to have Lutron because this is just Pico. And the reason I'm showing this to you is because this will control anything that uses the Zigbee Light Link protocol. So that includes things like Hue Lights, Cree Lights, GE Link Lights. I think the Osram Lights, although I haven't tried it. Now, as a caveat, the Hue Lights will... they don't support these non-Hue accessories, but it does work. So this I am using to replace the Hue. Hue makes a dimmer switch that is hideously ugly, whereas this is beautiful. And if you, this is just the remote.
I should show the beautiful part because I showed the wall insert, which was not beautiful. But once you mount the whole thing, this is what you get, right?
You get it with the lights, the Claro pad. So you have to buy all three of these things that Leo is showing you to get if you want to mount it on a switch.
You put this in your drywall.
If you just want to, yes.
And then you put this.
So if you were going to install this.
Over it.
Yeah, that goes over. So
and then you put
if you
this
wanted
inside.
To install this, and this is also good for if you've got Hue lights and people keep turning on the light switch and off the light switch and you're like, darn it, guys, you can't touch the light switch anymore. I've installed smart lighting.
Just leave it on. It's smart.
This is a way. So for the $30 for this whole setup, what you'll do is you'll take off your actual light switch, turn off your power before you do any of this, and then you just take some wire nuts and close off those wires, or you'll uninstall your switch, close off those wires, and then you pop this guy in, and then now it is controlled.
Ooh.
So, and it's less, yes, you still have to do a little bit of wiring, but it's not like crazy scary. Or if you don't want to do any of that, just duct tape over all of your light switches and just stick this next to it. But that's ugly.
Maybe you need to be an electrician probably to understand how to make this. There's wires that are going to come through one of these. Like, is that a cutout? Oh, I see. This slides up, that plastic.
It holds this kind of thing like that. So it's a separate remote.
I see. Yes. It doesn't. It's not wired. It's just a whole plate to hold stuff. I get it. Okay.
That plate thing. That see those screws on the top? You just screw that where your original switch box was.
Got it.
Because when a switch box comes out, do I have one?
You'll have little wires, but you don't. You just could cover those up.
So here's a switch, right? Here's the back stuff. This is what's inside your wall.
Hold it up a little higher.
This plate, a little higher.
Yeah.
And I froze.
I see.
So when you pull, and this isn't what you'll get there. You'll just get the front paste and none of this back stuff.
Got it.
Did that make sense? And then you put this in front of where all this used to live.
Makes perfect sense to me, Ollie. Can't wait to try it. I don't have anything smart.
But if you do try it, guys, turn the power off.
First. Not first. Afterwards.
The Lutron thing, too.
Turn it off first.
The Lutron things too. This is the one I have. It controls the lights in my office, but they're not. This isn't. I think it's a different model. But one of the things I like about the Lutrons is if you buy like their $60 one, you can replace any of your switches for your regular lights, and it turns all your lights into smart lights, and then your Amazon Echo can control them or whatever. And so these are dumb lights over my head, but I have got a smart wireless switch on the wall. And then my Echo can control them, and it is awesome, unless you ask my wife, because she doesn't like how they flick when they first come on. But I think they're cool.
I see. I don't have any of this stuff.
Different light bulbs can help that.
Oh, really?
CNET. Rye Christ over at CNET actually has done a breakdown of which light bulbs work best with the Lutron dimmers.
Oh.
So you can go check that out if you'd like. The other thing I should tell you about these, because I love Lutron. Like you, I love Lutron. you can actually get a Lutron bridge, and that can actually work in a dual phone home, a dual OS home with HomeKit and with like the Echo or a Wink Hub. So, and I forgot. If you have a Wink Hub and you have this guy, you can actually program it to control your lights, or you can leave it on the table and program it to do shortcuts. So then you could be like, movie night! But that's neither here nor there.
I still just walk over to the switch on the wall and turn it on and off. I'm very boring, I think.
Ugh, too much work.
You know what? Once you tie your lights to your Echo, I feel like you will never go back. I really do.
Really?
And like
Really? I installed all these wireless things in the house, and it was like, I just want to use the switch. And now everybody's like, A word, turn on the lights here. A word, turn on the lights there. No, you know, everyone's used to it and they like it. Well, to the degree that when we walk into a hotel, people are like, A word, turn on the lights.
Yeah. You spoiled, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, I know, I have echoes in every room, so I certainly have that part down. I just need to. So the best way to do this, I think, would be to do what you did, Danny, is because I have some Hues, but I don't want to put a Hues in everywhere. I just replace the switches.
No, do the Lutrons.
Do the Lutron switches.
It's a $65 switch.
Okay.
It's a $65 Lutron dimmer.
Set of lights, though, throughout the house.
Every set of
where
lights.
There's a switch.
And basically. If you have.
Yeah.
Where there's a switch. Now, but.
What if I have. Two
if you
switches.
Have a three-way light,
a three-way
if
light.
You have a three-way situation, which is two switches, you buy a kit that has basically a Pico remote, what I just showed you. It has exactly that all sold as one plus a dimmer switch. And then you put the actual switch in for one. I did this in my kitchen. Mm. And you're going to wire those up. And then you're going to take off your existing switch cap off the wires inside with a wire nut, and then put that Pico remote and plate on it.
Okay. That's what
and then you program that.
Almost all of our lights have dual switches, which is so one of them would have a real switch that would make the Luddites happy. And then the other one would be the one you talk to.
And you won't even know because one's the hardwired switch and the other one's the remote, but it's on the wall. So it just looks like a hardwired switch once you mount it on the wall.
Right. It doesn't do anything, though, right? No. That's going to frustrate people because they're going to walk up to it and tap it.
No, it'll do things.
No, it doesn't do anything. It still works. That's why it's beautiful.
It still works as a switch. Okay.
Yes. Okay. And I should also tell you, because we talked about the Lutron makes a hub, but it also works with the Wink Hub. Wink Hub is, and SmartThings just did a Lutron integration, although I haven't gotten mine to work yet. So I don't know if that's
I have Generation 2 SmartThings Hub, so I could use that if I got it all working.
No, actually for SmartThings, it's a cloud to cloud, so you need the Lutron bridge. No, it's the SmartThings. You need the Lutron bridge to work with the SmartThings hub. Sorry.
That sounds like me hitting my head on the microphone.
I know. You know what? If you want,
you're going to come to my house and do this for me.
I can send you my. Oh. I totally could. But I could send you my version one of the Wink Hub, and then you'll have the Lutron radio. It basically becomes a Lutron radio.
No, I should. I don't mind buying all this stuff. I should and do it.
Well, and there's a kit you can get that'll be a switch, the Lutron hub, and you're set to wire everything up and get one of your banks of lights going. It's very easy, and I even wired them myself. And
so is that the Casetta Wireless Smart Lighting Kit?
Probably.
It's got one smart bridge, two in-wall dimmers.
Yes.
Two Pico remotes, two tabletop pedestals, works with Echo. $189?
Well, that's good, though, because you're getting a bridge. You're getting that's 60 and 60 for each of your switches, and you're getting the bridge, which is a $60 bridge.
Okay.
You might be able to find it cheaper.
It's an $80 bridge.
Oh, so yeah. And you need the bridge, right?
Yes.
Is that how you
talk? You need a bridge or a Wink Hub.
Okay, I could use their bridge or the Wink one. And you said use the Wink, but if I'm going to buy this kit, I'd have the bridge.
Yeah, I mean, with the Lutron bridge do you get the dual.
Can I sleep on your couch when my wife divorces me for doing all this to the house?
Believe me. So,
actually,
this is
she'll be sleeping on
the most popular thing.
Okay. This is the most popular thing.
I promise you. It is the
most popular
thing. It is the most popular thing I've ever done in my home
really?
For my family. And actually, I'm actually about to. Okay, so there's actually things to know before we tell people, and I don't know if this is too much for y'all, but Lutron only works with incandescent lights, dimmable LEDs.
Yep.
Because these are dimmers.
Right.
So you have to make sure
you have a dimmable LED.
They're dimmable lights that you're working
with. Some LEDs are not dimmable.
So don't put them with like a CFL or something fluorescent.
Good. I hate CFLs anyway.
But.
Yeah.
They make a switch that's just on off you could do with those. Because I actually am about to buy one of those to stick in with some fluorescent lights.
So this would in effect turn everything into a dimmer too, which is nice.
But
I'm going to need, so this would do two switches, right? Because I get two remotes and two smart dimmers.
You might also, Leo, when you look at it, I think I bought there's another thing you can get that's the wireless kit that is this. It's one switch and it's one bridge, and that's $100 on Amazon. And then I think you can buy just the another switch for one of your things that's like 60. So there you go. You'll save like $60.
Oh, boy. Okay. Someday when I have some
time.
And
people, so there's a lot of people in the chat room talking about it being a proprietary radio protocol, and it is.
Yeah.
But.
What is it?
Like Sonos, which uses their proprietary.
Yeah, what is it?
It's Clear Connect.
Right.
But it's such a good one, and your lights will work. And pairing things with Lutron is so easy. I mean, believe me, I play with this stuff all day long, and I love them.
I'm kind of.
And if you got a HomeKit, it's all on your phone.
Right, I do. And then we already have all the Echoes. And all right. So I didn't even put the Hues back in. It was like, I don't really need the RGB thing. I don't care about.
Yeah.
So I just, it would be nice though to be able to say, turn on the kitchen lights. And you could also have a command, right? To turn all the lights in the house off, right?
Leo.
Yes. Yeah.
I just set up the best command. If you've got Stringify.
Yeah.
This is great. So I say A, she who shall not be named, tell Stringify good night. And what it does is it turns off my Lutron light in the bedroom, master bedroom lights. It turns off a Wemo light that my husband's lamp is plugged into. It turns off the Hue light bulb that is in my actual lamp. It sets my thermostat down to 70-something degrees. And
wow.
Make sure my blinds are closed. And it's all one command.
Wow.
It's amazing. Okay, that's it.
Can it turn on the attack
dog
recording?
So you should buy this.
Let me ask you one more question. That is, which thermostat do you recommend? Which one do you use? Do you use a Nest?
I have a Nest and I have an Ecobee.
I'm tempted because here's why I want the Ecobee. Because I want one with remote thermometer mesh. Because the thermostat's in the hall, but it overheats our bedroom because the hall's colder than the bedroom. So I want to have a little thermometer in the bedroom. That's Ecobee,
right? The speculation is that...
Nest was...
Yeah, that's Ecobee. There is speculation that Google's about to launch that, though. Just so you know.
And Danny raised his hand.
I have a Sensi.
A Sensi?
That's on the wall over there.
Yeah?
Thanks
I never
to
heard
the
of that
good,
one.
Thanks to the good folks at Wirecutter, it was their recommended thing. And it's about $60. And it's, you know, I have a Nest downstairs, but I have Sensis on the two thermostats in two different rooms upstairs. And they're great. For the three times a year I have to turn on the heating in the house, right? Or the air conditioning. But, you know, you want remote access to them, and you can get them that way as well.
Sensi is spelled
S-E-N-S-I.
S-N-S-I, of course. Because why should it be easy?
I know.
The best smart well, you know what? Wirecutter now says the Nest is the best smart thermostat. So,
Does the Sensi work with Amazon Echo?
I think it does.
The Honeywell T.
Just haven't gotten around to setting it up.
Emerson makes the Sensi. How interesting. I didn't know they were still around. Oh, all right. All right. Yeah, the Wirecutter is a great resource, I have to say. They now are saying the Nest is the best. But they did talk about the Sensi.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it depends on your smart thermostat needs too, right? For me, like the Nest has all that fancy stuff. I'll learn all these things or whatever.
Orange County, it doesn't ever.
Yeah, it's like two times a year I turn on the air conditioning, and three times a year I turn on the heating. It's just it's mainly so I don't have to get off the couch.
Right.
You know,
if I don't get off the couch, I will gain even more weight. So I better probably not put any of this stuff in. Stacy covers all this.
You need a Fitbit charge too.
I have that too. Stacy covers all this on her podcast, Stacy on IoT. You can find it at iotpodcast.com, the show she does with our great friend Kevin Toefel. Please give him my regards.
Right.
And you can also visit her here every Wednesday for This Week in Google, or tweet her at GigaStacy. The great Danny Sullivan, searchengineland.com, marketingengineland.com. At Danny Sullivan on the Twitter. Anything else you want to plug?
No, that's it. We have our big MarTech show that'll be coming up. So if you're interested in marketing technology, check that out in coming up in May. And
good.
You can find that. We have a third site now called MarTech Today. It says all about marketing technology. So
nice.
Third member of the family.
You are just killing it.
Keeps us busy.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for
great
joining
being here.
Us. Yeah. Thank you all for being here. We do This Week in Google, which is, as you can see, This Week in whatever the hell we want to talk about, every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern Time, 20:30 UTC. Yes, we're in summertime now, so it's 20:30 UTC. Please stop by. Join us live if you can. Join us in the chat room. If you can't, you can always get on-demand versions after the fact at our website, twit.tv/twig, or wherever you get your podcasts. But do subscribe. We don't want you to miss an episode. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.